Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Now, am I the only one that's a little discombobulated because of the time change?
Oh, no.
No, you're not.
No, you're not alone.
Springing ahead is really
this
hard.
This is the hard one, especially with the hours that we do on Sunday morning.
Oh, yeah. We're like coal miners here. This is hard work. What do you mean? Especially, well, you mean because we get up early?
Because we get up early and we're losing here an hour. We're not gaining like we do in the fall
when we actually
set the clocks back. Yes.
I'm really, like, I feel like I have jet lag, though.
That was the way the feeling was described by a doctor in a story I saw the other day.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, dogs are confused as well. Otis is used to eating at like 7 in the morning. And I left the house, you know, early, and he still was not itching to eat. He was
really,
yeah, he was not ready to go yet because it was still on
his internal
clock. It was still 6 o'clock.
Hmm. I've had dogs pretty much all my life. I don't think I ever knew a single moment where my dog didn't want to eat something.
Yeah, well, it's usually true with Otis, but you know, the morning feeding is obviously the first one of the day, and he was really excited about that.
He was still sleepy.
Yeah.
Still tired.
A very regimented dog.
Poor guy. Yeah.
Well, Andy runs his house.
I run a tight ship. Yeah.
Runs it with iron fist.
If Melina says it's okay, I run a tight ship.
Yes. Right.
Should we have some melatonin or something? No, that would make it worse, wouldn't it?
Yeah, no, I'm going sleeping, for my 12th cup of coffee.
Yeah. I'm on my fourth. I usually only have one. This could be a wild morning today.
Why don't we just stay on this time, for goodness sakes?
We did a while ago.
Just pick one, you know? Just pick one or the other. It doesn't matter. Just
no. You know, Hawaii and Arizona do not change their clocks. They stay the same throughout the year.
Yeah. That was the worst thing about spring training when I was living in San Diego, because some of the games during spring training would be Mountain Standard Time for Arizona and Pacific for San Diego, and then they came together.
You're making me more dizzy.
Yeah. See, this is why we need to pick one. Just pick one.
Isn't it because farmers have time to do whatever?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Isn't that the reason behind
it? That's one of them. That's one of them.
There's more daylight hours for whatever it is.
That's one reason.
I don't know. I'm too out of it to, you know, think about
it. You are sounding like you're out of it.
I'm out of it today.
Wouldn't more daylight be good for everybody, even in the winter? I mean,
wouldn't bother me.
That's what I mean. You know, that seasonal affect disorder.
I need it more in the wintertime than any other time. But you'd think with 1 hour it just wouldn't be that big of a deal.
True.
But
it is.
It's a lot. Schwani, I'm under a lot of stress today. I don't take that as sincere form.
It's Dean's Super Bowl today.
Yeah, it's Oscar Sunday on top of it.
I know.
Nothing but stress today wondering.
Andy has been hard at work getting his special sports cast.
Got a special Oscar
ready.
Sports cast.
I'm having trouble with one, by the way. Just having trouble with one.
Oppenheimer?
No, I figured
that's
out a way
the
to
one
get Oppenheimer
I was
in there.
Having problems with.
There's one that's just
Andy
kind of escaping me.
Andy does a sports cast in which he works in all the names of the Oscar nominees.
Right, the
songs.
Best pictures, yeah. Yeah, I'm having a trouble with the Killer of the Flower Moon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But I'm going to make it happen. Trust me.
I had trouble with it about 3 hours into the movie. I had trouble with it. Daylight savings time. Check your clocks. Although most clocks are automatically resetting themselves these days, right?
Yep.
Except that weird one that I have in my kitchen that looks like a cat and the tail wags. You know what I'm talking about? That one I still have to change by hand.
Yeah. Boy, it's a good thing I caught my error in resetting my alarm clock last night.
Hmm.
I had moved it up to a.m. rather than p.m.
Oh.
So I would have been... Well, I had my alarm going off on the phone, too, so I would have been okay. But that would not have been good. Because the alarm wouldn't have gone off.
Right. AM and PM. Right. There's a big difference.
Yes, there is.
12-hour difference.
Yep.
There was a reason why I played that Eagles song.
It's a good song.
I forgot what it was. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They were here in Chicago for the last couple of days. Final appearance.
The final, the goodbye tour of the Eagles?
The goodbye tour of the Eagles was at the United Center Friday and Saturday nights.
Steely Dan, I think, was with them.
Steely Dan was the opening act. 2-hour show these guys put in.
Wow.
All the hits.
So which number of farewell tour is this? Is this the first one? Or
the farewell tour.
Yeah. Because usually they have a farewell tour, then we really mean it, farewell tour.
Well, their farewell tour.
The final farewell tour.
It's been going on for quite some
time. That's what I mean. So.
I don't know. I think they sort of mean it.
Yeah.
I don't think they really get along that well.
Oh, really? Yeah. I didn't know that.
Unlike us on this show.
Of course. We kid because we can.
Or it's nothing but love, nonstop, day and night, 24/7.
L-O-V-E.
Yeah. They did all their hits. And you know, if you think about it, the Eagles have had number one songs since the early 70s. It's a long time.
It wasn't, at one point, wasn't the Greatest Hits Volume 1 the most selling album in the world?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back in my DJ days, that was some heavy-duty stuff.
Oh, yeah.
When there was a new... I remember when New Kid in Town came out.
So do I.
When it debuted, and it was... You know, it was like the seas were parted. You know, it was amazing.
That one and One of These Nights and Best of My Love were the big Eagles songs I played in my DJ days.
Witchy Woman.
That was another one, yeah.
Or Witch A Woman if you're a Seinfeld fan.
I think my favorite Eagles song is Tequila Sunrise.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Yep.
I love that song.
Oh, Hotel California was big.
Well,
when
that's
I was
the name. Yeah, that's the album from which New Kid in Town comes, I believe, right? Am I remembering that correctly?
I think you are correct. Yeah, I kind of joined in on the Long Run, that album, 79-ish.
It was a good one.
A Heartache Tonight.
Loved that. Yep. I love that song.
Yep.
I love that song.
You could do a sports cast with all the Eagles titles there, Andy.
Yeah, I could.
Why don't you whip something up for
sure,
us?
Sure, yeah. I can do that.
I want to see how he works in
Desperado. Be careful what you wish for. Remember that.
That's right.
Be careful what you wish for.
See how he works in Rocky Mountain Way, too.
Seven Bridges Road.
I didn't go to the shows, but I heard that they were great, that everybody was great. You know, Don Henley's son... Not Don Henley, but Glenn Frey's, the late Glenn Frey's son, now is, you know, part of the band. And he took over doing the vocals on many of the songs. Deacon is his name. Deacon Frey. It's a cool name, isn't it?
It is a cool name, yes.
I think I'm going to start calling myself Deacon.
Deacon we Dean? Had to call you leader at one time. And
Fearless leader.
Fearless leader.
Fearless
oh,
leader.
Wow.
Fearless leader. If anyone went to that Eagle show, I would be curious to hear what you thought. But I've been hearing nothing but great things that after all these years, they're still powering through. You know, much like I was most impressed with this point. When I went to see Paul McCartney at Wrigley Field, pushing 80 years old at that time, and he just played nonstop and with complete no sign of fatigue whatsoever. I mean, he just was awesome. And I got to think that the Eagles are about that age, right?
They're in their 70s.
Oh, yeah, late 70s probably.
They'll be in their late 70s.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, so there you go. We're going to cover a lot of Oscar stuff today. We've got interviews with the major nominees. We're going to sprinkle throughout the program today. We've got Andy's Oscar sportscast later. It's become a tradition on Oscar Sunday morning. Food from the movies. It's one of the very first food topics that we did when I started working here at WGN back in 1842.
Before the radio was even invented. You were still doing the
food. You're a pioneer.
Yeah, I was over at Tribune Tower. It was just a vacant lot then. The building wasn't even up then. And I was, sitting there by myself, saying someday this will be a mattress store. But that was one of the, I think that was the very first food show that we did, food from the movies. And every year, the phones blow up. Every year, it's a lot of fun. So we'll get to that coming up a little bit later on. We've got a lot of Oscar trivia today. We've got a lot of good stuff here today.
We get as much response on the food for the movies as we do for Super Bowl parties, I think.
Probably.
You know, what people cook, different recipes, yeah, that kind of thing.
Well, it's a big day. You know, it's...
It is.
Oscar Sunday. You know, it's all starting an hour early today, just in case you're not messed up enough already with the time change.
They fell back. We spring forward.
There, yeah. The Oscars are going to start at 6 o'clock today, which in many ways is great, because in theory, that means the show will end an hour early.
It's actually starting at 4 p.m.
Well, the
in Hollywood.
Right, California time, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think they want to, you know, they want to get out of there and get to over to In-N-Out Burger.
That's the way to go.
That's what they do when you win an Oscar. That's what Paul Giamatti did when he won a Golden Globe.
Went to In-N-Out Burger?
He went to In-N-Out Burger. He went inside the restaurant, puts his Golden Globe statue on the table while he's eating one of those double-double burgers, which is my favorite also, by the way.
Is he up for an award?
Up for
Best Actor
for the Holdovers.
The Holdovers? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to win. I mean, it's going to be either him or Cillian Murphy.
Cillian Murphy with Oppenheimer.
But I think this is going to be Oppenheimer's night.
That seems to be the direction.
Yeah. I didn't do a big prediction list this year because I think everything is pretty set in stone. I think Oppenheimer is going to win Best Picture. Christopher Nolan, I think, is going to win Best Director. Cillian Murphy, Robert Downey Jr., for Best Supporting Actor. That's been every awards ceremony, you know, for the award season. And I have no reason to think that anything's going to change with that. This actress who was in The Holdovers, who played the grieving mother.
She was great.
Divine Joy Randolph is her name. She's been winning every single award also. I think she's going to win tonight. Deservedly so. She's fantastic in that movie. I think really the only wild card category is Best Actress, where we have Lily Gladstone from Killers of the Flower Moon and Emma Stone from Poor Things. They're both incredible performances, but I think the Academy is going to give it to, a lot of people think it's going to be Lily Gladstone. It could be either one. I mean, it's pretty much dead heat. But I think because Emma Stone's performance is so eclectic and out there, you know, acting for acting job, it was a courageous performance that Emma Stone put in, and I think the Hollywood people are going to recognize that, and I think Emma Stone's about to win her second Academy Award, so we'll see.
What about Carey Mulligan?
Carey Mulligan is nominated for Best Actress.
Yes.
From
Maestro.
Maestro, which was my favorite movie from last year, but it has got zero traction, with any award ceremony. It did not catch on.
Mm-hmm.
So you saw it, though, right?
Yes.
Didn't you go see it?
Yeah. First day it opened.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which movies have you seen this year? You saw The Holdovers.
The Holdovers, Oppenheimer, and Maestro. So now I am resident
expert. Yeah. You've seen more than a lot of the people who are voting for Academy Awards.
Didn't even see the movies and they voted for it.
Well, they were very busy. They were. You didn't see Barbie?
No, didn't see Barbie. I'm not a Barbenheimer.
I would pay money for you. I would buy your ticket.
Would you buy my ticket?
Yeah.
You would?
Yeah, because I would just like to see you sit through that.
You went to see it twice because you didn't understand it.
Well, I really did not like it at all. I understood it, but I didn't like it. And everybody's telling me how great it is. And I thought, all right, maybe I missed something. Maybe it's possible you're not in a good mood when you go see a movie. and you're going to come out with a different feeling than you might otherwise. Let me give it another shot. And I went again and felt exactly
you still
the
didn't
same way. didn't change one opinion in my mind. So,
well, maybe if we go see it, I can explain it.
Barbie.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the last movie that you would be understanding. American Fiction is nominated, which is a really good movie. I think that may win one of the screenplay awards. Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest. Those are the big movies for tonight. And I think it's going to, as I say, I think it's going to be all Oppenheimer.
Today. Yeah.
So, yeah. We'll see. should probably do a little break ski. And then you got a far-flung forecast?
Oh, yes, I do.
Is it Oscar related?
No, it isn't.
Yeah, well, thanks for keeping in the theme of the show. I appreciate that. Far-flung forecast, our weekly compendium of fascinating facts and information. And here with the latest, may I have the envelope, please? It's Dave Schwann.
Well, thank you very much, Dean. Good morning, everyone. And actually, if you remember last week, we got off on a kind of a tangent, if you will, later in the show.
On this show on a tangent?
No, we just got off on a subject that just kind of came up. Off the cuff about funny names of towns and places.
Very, very popular segment last week.
So I thought I would continue in that vein this morning. So friends, get out your compasses and protractors and newfangled devices because we are going to, are you ready? Burnt Corn, Alabama.
Nice.
No population. It's an unincorporated community.
Burnt Corn, Alabama.
It is in southern Alabama. It's about an hour and a half away from Mobile, Alabama.
You know who the senator is from Alabama, don't you? Senator Katie Britt.
Yes.
Who did
yes,
the Republican
that's
response.
Correct. That's correct.
I wonder if she's from Burnt Corn.
No, I don't know. But the settlement may have been named for an incident in which some people moving through the area found a pile of burnt corn that were used by various the people there. There was also a small war there, a creek war, where there was some burning of crops and so forth. But structures in Burnt Corn include the Lowry General Store, where they once had a post office,
that's a good store.
A Masonic Lodge, and the Duck Waters Barber Shop.
That's my favorite barber shop.
That's where a satellite shop for Floyd Lawson.
Yeah, I love the Duck.
Duck Waters Barber Shop. That's right. So Burnt Corn, Alabama has a very nice
Mr. Schwann,
day.
Step right up. We've got a chair for you right here. Let me dust
no
it off.
Waiting. No waiting.
And sit down. You want to shave today?
No waiting. Step right in.
Best shave you'll ever get in Burnt Corn.
And it's an extra charge for Witch Hazel. Sonny.
Hey, I like to play checkers in between the customs.
Come on, dude. Would you like a lollipop? Sunny right. skies
that,
and 48.
That just sounds creepy now.
Sunny skies and... He asked Barney if he wanted one once. Sunny skies and 48 in Burnt Corn, Alabama this morning.
Got a lot of the Oscar nominees that I've talked to during Oscar season. Emma Stone coming up just after 10 o'clock. Martin Scorsese. Christopher Nolan. Cillian Murphy and many more. Plus, this past week, we lost one of the great singers of all time, singers and actors, really, the late Steve Lawrence, who was here on the program with us back in 2007. We had a lovely conversation. We're going to remember Steve Lawrence coming up in a little while. Right now, though, the week in health, Dr. Jeremy Silver joining us, the medical director, emergency medicine, Northwestern Medicine, Kishwaukee Hospital. And how is Dr. Silver this morning?
Hey, good morning. Nice to talk to you again.
Always good to have you on with us. So, first of all, let's talk about this time change. I started the show today saying how completely discombobulated I feel. It's only 1 hour change. It's not like I went to Europe or something, but boy, I sure feel like I got hit in the head with a mallet with this time change. What's going on? What's going on in the human body when we go through changes like this?
Well, Dean, you know, I share that sensation. I was going to say being hit by a dump truck, but a mallet works too.
Same thing.
It's when you start tinkering with something called circadian rhythms that the body fights back and says, you know, this is not the natural order of things. So what you're doing is essentially trying to force the body's natural response to light to changes in the brain that are extremely complex, hormonal, neurosignaling with proteins in the brain that help the body recognize when it's time to sleep and time to wake up. But also there's a cascade of hormones, stress hormones, and other things that are occurring in the body that are less well understood, that for lack of a better way of describing, get screwed up. And we know through research that there are an increase in negative side effects from this, whether it's increased pro-inflammatory proteins. There's an increased risk of cardiovascular events and mood disturbances. And a variety of other outcomes that I think we'd all rather avoid.
About just grumpiness.
Yeah, that too.
Feeling of lethargy, it feels like jet lag to me. I feel like I just got off a plane coming from Europe or something.
That's a great analogy, actually, because jet lag is just a more pronounced version of this spring ahead, fall back business.
So how do we counteract this? Is there something that we can do? Is there something to mitigate all these physiological effects that you're talking about?
It's all common sense type stuff. Getting at least 7 hours of sleep before and after the time change. I guess the horse is already out of the barn for that. Shifting your bedtimes a little bit earlier, and in concert with that, maybe eating a little bit earlier, and just trying to get outside and get extra sunlight this week. And unfortunately, the weather's going to participate, so we're going to have more sun. So try and get that sun while it's out, and that'll help your body kind of readjust.
Yeah. Are there certain kinds of foods that are better for this type of thing than others? I mean, do you go heavy with proteins, with carbs, with, is there a difference, really?
Anytime that you want to reduce inflammation, fruits and vegetables are definitely the way to go. So if you were thinking about maybe experimenting with a vegetarian diet, this would be the week for it. Mm. So lots of healthy greens, really anything green, anything that grows out of the ground, and beans, nuts, using olive oil. Those are all part of the Mediterranean diet, and it's kind of also a anti-inflammatory diet at the same time.
Yeah, during the week you were telling me about the study that had come out related to lack of sleep and a connection with the risk of developing diabetes. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So we know that first of all, diabetes is the body's natural resistance to a hormone called insulin. Insulin is a protein that's made in the pancreas that helps all your cells transport sugar into the cell so that it can be used for energy. So sugar can be a good thing, but too much of it can lead to resistance of the cells to the insulin. And so if you think of the insulin as the key to the lock, to the lock of the cell, if you will, that key just stops fitting into the lock over time, and the cells develop resistance and sugar builds up in the bloodstream, and that leads to a lot of other consequences. But the thinking is that there are other factors that may lead to resistance, such as obesity and inflammation. There are also lots of literature out there to suggest that potentially there's elements in the pollutants in the air and of course in the water and the food that we eat that can also contribute to it. But this sort of irritant we talk about with lack of sleep creates a pro-inflammatory state. So if you're constantly sleep deprived, that definitely could drive this.
Yeah, I gotta think that if you're sleep deprived, you suddenly become vulnerable to just about everything, right? Like in my mind, it just feels like all of the systems are not operating at peak, efficiency. So
sleep is the key to everything, and I constantly try to drill this into my children's heads, and they don't seem to agree with me, but you're absolutely right. Sleep is key to reducing inflammation and maintaining a healthy mind and body balance. And like you say, mood is a big part of it, and so is your cardiovascular system. Lack of sleep is associated with an increase in cardiovascular events, so it just affects every part of the body.
So a lack of sleep or disruption of sleep, like a lot of people are going to have for the next week or so until we get used to this time change, could lead you vulnerable to lots of different things. What if you're already diabetic? Does it create an increased risk of something going wrong with a lack of sleep?
I think we can draw that conclusion. You know, Dean, there's more hospital admissions in the week following the change, the time change. There's an increase in medical errors because, you know, doctors are human beings, and they are also part of this process suffering from the sleep loss. So you think about your surgeon coming in for a case at 7 in the morning. Now it's actually 6 in the morning in terms of where your body is at. So there's a lot of unthought of consequences, I think, that are supportive of maybe dropping this thing totally.
Yeah, so what about napping? Does napping help, or does it make it even more disruptive if you're not getting a good solid 8 hours in a row?
Well, the napping can be an excellent way to refresh the body. The key is not to nap too long. My understanding is that 20 to 30 minutes is a good time, but if you go beyond that and start getting into your rapid eye movements or your REM cycle, then you can kind of make it difficult to go to sleep later that night.
Hmm. Not good news for me. I love a good afternoon nap.
Just set your alarm, Dean.
Yeah, that would go right out the window. let me take a quick break here. And as always, let's open up the phone lines. Your questions for Dr. Jeremy Silver. I've got some questions about this measles outbreak that I thought we were done with measles. Two cases now reported in the Chicago area. We'll talk about that and get to your calls next. 312-981-7200. Tomorrow for your Manic Monday, I'll be recapping the Oscars, both on TV and radio. If you don't watch the Academy Awards tonight, I'll have all the winners, losers. I'll have the, the moments, as they say. We'll recap it all for you tomorrow morning. In the meantime, Dr. Jeremy Silver is with us and taking your questions at 312-981-7200. Before we get to that, though, a second case of measles, doctor, now has been diagnosed in Chicago in less than 24 hours. This one is involving a child in the Pilsen area. Previously, a couple of days ago, at a patient who was treated at Swedish Hospital on the northwest side, I thought we had eradicated measles. So this is a little disturbing that it's popping up again.
Well, Dean, it's really upsetting, primarily because it disproportionately impacts kids. You know, measles is a highly contagious virus, a serious disease that can lead to serious complications and death. And like you said, we had essentially eradicated it, not 100%, but by and large, it wasn't floating around through vaccinations. We know that measles vaccinations averted around 50 million deaths just between 2000 and 2021. It's a cheap vaccine. It was widely available. And it's just unfortunate that people are turning away from that because there's very, very real on the ground consequences of an unvaccinated population.
So what should parents look for to make sure that their kids are okay?
Well, first of all, symptoms can start out kind of like every other virus. You have a cough, a runny nose. The eyes can get irritated, so like a conjunctivitis type of picture. But usually you get really high fevers. Kids will become just irritable and appear sicker than a typical, viral illness. And the hallmark rash is a rash that spreads from head to toe. So it starts at the head, maybe around the ears or the forehead or cheeks or neck, and then goes rapidly down through the body down to the feet.
And if I remember correctly from back in the day, kind of itchy. I mean, notoriously itchy, right?
It can be, absolutely.
Let's get to some phone calls. The text line of the 773 area code, I wake up several times during the night to go to the bathroom. Am I disturbing my sleep cycle by doing this the way that you described?
That's a great question. I think it depends on whether or not you're truly waking up and then having a hard time going back to sleep, or if it's just a quick wake up to go tinkle and then back to bed, and you're able to quickly get back into that sleep cycle. It's going to be most likely less disturbing to you.
A measles-related question from the 708 area code. If you were vaccinated back in the day, are you safe? Is that vaccination that we took when we were kids, is that still working?
Yes, it has a great persistent immunity. And I'll say this, measles hangs in the air for 2 hours after a person has been in a room. So if you go into a public restroom, for instance, and somebody with measles was in it, and you aren't vaccinated, 9 out of 10 people within that 2 hour period that go throughout that restroom are going to become infected with the virus.
Wow.
Those are the unvaccinated. Okay. But people that are at higher risk, I will say, include those with autoimmune diseases. So people with diabetes or people with lupus or thyroid diseases, so many, rheumatoid arthritis, the list goes on, are going to be at higher risk. Children, obviously, pregnant women and the elderly. But the vaccine is extremely effective, and it's effective throughout your life.
So that sounds like many of the same vulnerable people as from COVID. Can we protect ourselves with masks, with gloves? I mean, should people be concerned enough to do that right now with these two cases that have popped up?
Two cases does not an epidemic make. Certainly masks are helpful. Let me put it to you this way, Dean. I can't give good, clear advice on that, and I'm not an infectious disease expert. But if I were somebody, say, with cancer, or a chronic disease, and I were kind of going around public places right now, I might wear a mask. It can't hurt.
Yeah. Knowing that it's out there, and you've got some kind of vulnerability, why take the chance, right? Why not just, err on the side of caution? Here's an interesting question from Ted on our phone line, 312-981-7200. Ted, you're on WGN.
Yeah, good morning, Dean, and good morning, Dr. Silver. If you would, Dr. Silver, rank in order of their harmfulness to us, overall harmfulness to us, alcohol, tobacco, and cannabis.
That's a great question. I appreciate that. I would put cannabis at the bottom of the list for now, okay, and I'll come back to that. Tobacco, I would have to say, is number one. Tobacco is responsible for 60-plus different types of cancer. It's the number one contributor to the chronic lung disease called COPD, or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And it just is contributes to a variety of other problems, including heart attacks and peripheral vascular disease. So if I were to eliminate, if I had the choice between eliminating booze and eliminating cigarettes, I'd pick the cigarettes every time. That being said, I think the more we learn about alcohol, the more cautious I am with my patients about counseling them. It used to be the thought that a couple of glasses of wine every night might be a good thing with the some of the components of the particularly red wine are thought to be potentially anti-inflammatory. But I think overall, on balance, the evidence in terms of chronic inflammation, high blood pressure, cancer, it probably is best to limit alcohol use. And then in terms of the cannabis, there are a variety of components of cannabis that are still not well understood. There are parts of if you want to just think about it in terms of the general overall catch-all term, parts of the cannabis are helpful to sleep and anxiety and pain. But we know that there are other components that can increase risk of cardiovascular disease, stroke, heart attack, and death. And so I would be very cautious, even with the gummies. It's not just with the smoking it.
What about the medicinal value, though, of marijuana? I mean, isn't there that doctors are prescribing marijuana for patients with a number of ailments?
It's true, and I think there's always going to be pros and cons to every drug. I mean, aspirin is great if you've had a heart attack, but if you take too much, it can make you bleed. So same thing with marijuana. There may be some value to it for some folks, and in those cases, then I would advise you to follow the instructions of your doctor. But I think there's more and more evidence that it's not all upside.
Yeah, and it sounds like moderation might be the key. When you were talking about the wine consumption of, it having, previously we had thought that there was some value to it. Wine in moderation, is that all right? Or are you saying that there's evidence now that even moderate use may be dangerous?
I think moderation is certainly the watchword, and it may be deemed that some folks, a glass of wine every night and they live to 96. Genetics obviously playing the largest role in factors that determine longevity. But I think it's going to affect different people differently. Certainly, men and women, their biochemistry is different, and so the number of glasses, the recommendations are different.
Right. Yeah.
But I think just paying attention to the news on this, I think we're going to see more of this over time, kind of come out over time.
Yeah. Very, very, very interesting. Good question. Thank you very much for that. And Dr. Silver, thank you very much. Always enjoy talking to you, Dr. Jeremy Silver, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern Medicine's Kishwaukee Hospital. Have a great Sunday, Doc. Thank you.
Dean, take care. Thanks for having me.
10:30 Daylight Saving Time.
Saving time. Yes.
Saving no S.
He said with a frog in his throat.
Yeah.
Saving time.
Saving no S.
It is now 10:07, 7 minutes after 10 o'clock.
It's 53 minutes until 53 11.
Minutes until 11.
What did you say? What was your example of the other no S?
What was it?
You said something.
Oh, Soldier's Field.
Oh, yeah, Soldier's
Field. Yes,
Soldier's.
Which is what I grew up saying all my life until I got to Chicago and was corrected very politely. It is Soldier Field.
I think a lot of us did that.
Oh, we did. Sure.
We made it possessive.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else texted in that it's Jewel, not Jewels.
That's right.
Ah, yes. Come on. It's the Jewels.
It's the Jewels.
Going over to the Jewels.
Ryan Gosling, who you're going to see perform this song on the Oscars tonight. The song, I'm Just Ken. from the movie that I am now lobbying for Schwani to go see. Think you can go see it this afternoon before the Oscars? I'll pay.
You'll pay?
I'll buy you popcorn and milk duds. What's your candy of choice when you go to the theater?
Are
you a milk dud person?
I was milk, not really. I liked the Raisinettes.
That's mine too.
Raisinettes.
Yeah.
Ooh, Raisinettes.
Yeah, that's mine.
Popcorn and the Raisinettes.
Yeah.
Hmm. With a giant Coke.
Was one of my favorite.
No sugar involved.
One of my favorite bands from the 60s, by the way. Popcorn and the Raisinettes.
Popcorn
and the Raisinettes. And that combination that you just mentioned would be about $47.
Would be now, yeah, yes.
Yeah. You have to put a deposit down on the popcorn box.
Yeah, they make you fill out forms like going to get a mortgage.
No, they want your name.
Before you get concessions, you have
the last four digits of your Social Security number.
A co-signer. They call in David Hochberg to see if you're a good credit risk.
You have to be pre-approved to buy popcorn.
Yeah. I don't usually get anything to eat.
I don't either anymore. No.
Because you're cheap, you mean?
I know. It's because expensive. I don't want to pay the amount of money you have to pay for popcorn and
cheap.
Candy.
You're cheap.
All right.
It's very expensive. I can't.
Oh, so now I'm cheap, but you're going on to say, oh, it's very expensive.
It is very expensive. I'm teasing you that
after
you're cheap.
You pay.
And you are cheap, by the way. That has nothing to do with movie theaters.
All right.
You. Poor Lincoln's been squeezed so many times by you on the penny. But it's super, it's like ridiculously expensive. But I'm just not an eater. I want to concentrate on the movie.
Yeah,
okay. You know what I mean. I don't want to be chomping. And I've talked before about how annoying it is when other people are making noise with their food and wrappers. And
oh yes,
it's a pet. It is definitely a pet peeve of mine.
Oh yes.
It's dangerous to get something to drink, too, with as long as these movies are these days.
Right.
A little tough to have that giant Diet Coke or whatever.
Even a small one is giant.
Yep.
So it's, that's part of it.
Plenty of other good places to eat.
Anyway, I'm trying to get Schwani to go see Barbie. Just because I think it would be funny for you, especially if you went alone. Grown man.
Well, did you go alone?
Yes.
Twice?
I always go to the movies alone.
Did you wear the raincoat that you cover up the grocery cart with?
It's a little
with?
Creepy when I went to see Kung Fu Panda 4 when it's all children. And then creepy old Uncle Dean walks in. It's like, what's that guy? Who's that old guy over there by himself?
Some poor mother taking her children to the movies. Have to move them away.
Yeah. I don't know if they're more uncomfortable or I'm more uncomfortable. It's definitely creepy. That's the truth.
Well, you have to explain that when you and your brothers went to the movies, that you were
they would ditch
you
me.
Were abandoned.
Yeah, they ditched me. Yeah.
They ditched you. Yes,
my mother and we're four boys. Four siblings. My mother insisted, if we were going to go to the movies, that we all had to go, and the older brothers had to watch the younger brothers. I'm the youngest of the four, and the moment that we got to the theater, they would ditch me.
See you, Dean.
Now, I'm interested in this. Seriously, was there a favorite theater of yours that you would go to in the neighborhood?
Yeah, the Avalon Theater.
The Avalon Theater.
Do you know that theater?
I know of it, the name.
It's on 79th Street near Stony Island.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's closed now. They were going to reopen it. It did reopen as the new Regal Theater. And then it fell into disrepair. They were going to reopen it. I don't know what the latest status of it is, but it was one of those movie palace theaters. You know
right.
what I mean?
Yep.
It used to be
yep.
in every neighborhood. And in our neighborhood, we had the Avalon. That's where we went most. We had the Shelton Theater that was on, I don't remember what street it was on, so further east. We had the Jeffrey Theater. We had the Hamilton Theater. Which ones were near you when you were growing up?
Growing up, we went into Lansing
to see a movie at the Lanz Theater, L-A-N-S, on Ridge Road. People in the area will know that well. There was also a theater in Highland, the Town Theater. Sadly, there was a real effort to save it, and they just couldn't come up with the money, so that one is no longer gone. But the Town Theater there. And then when I was in high school, the Cinema 1 and 2 complexes popular there.
That was a big deal.
It was there almost every week to see a movie.
Yeah, we used to, when our first Cinema 1, 2 kind of concept was when they did that at Ford City. And we go over to Ford City, and it's like, wow, two theaters in one place. That's amazing. Yep.
But then for the big night out, the River Oaks Theater.
Oh, yeah.
That was the one there in Calumet City.
That was a big deal to go to River Oaks.
The big screen, those chairs, the sound. That's where I first saw Star Wars. Mm. It was great.
Mm. We used to go to the River Oaks Theater and then Barnaby's.
On Torrance Avenue there. Yeah.
Go over there and get some pizza and see if we could talk someone into buying us a beer.
Can you buy us a beer? Yeah, we're 21, but I forgot my ID.
Andy, where'd you go?
The Golf Mill Theater.
Golf Mill. Yeah. Fancy.
Golf Mill Theater. Saw Rocky there. Saw Star Wars there. Field of Dreams.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. In the theater.
Yep.
Field of Dreams.
Oh, yeah.
That was classic. I was listening to some songs yesterday, and the Drifter song, Saturday Night at the Movies, Who Cares What Picture We See? And I noticed, I heard something in the lyric that struck me funny. Let me see if I have this here. Let me see. I think this is it. Saturday night. Part of that, one lyric and all of that is completely obsolete now.
The balcony?
Balcony.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Where do you find a theater with a balcony anymore?
Yep. I only remember a couple of them. There was in downtown Hammond, the Paramount Theater was a movie palace equivalent, not as big as the Avalon, perhaps, that you went to, or certainly not as big as the Chicago Theater. But it did have a balcony there.
The Avalon had a balcony.
Did it?
I don't remember some of the others.
Golf Mill had one. And a couple of the theaters they did.
Where are kids going to make out now? That's sad if kids don't have some place to go in the last row of the, home of my baby, last row in the balcony. Where do you get that awkward, oh, I'm just going to stretch. Put your arm out.
Where's a good launch angle for popcorn to your friends in the below you?
Right. Oh, that was a big deal.
That was huge.
Yeah. Yeah, popcorn on your friends below you.
Oh, yeah.
We used to like to throw milk duds.
Even better.
Milk duds will leave a welt.
Yeah, those carry a little bit better.
Oh, they would.
Oh, yeah.
They would.
Yep.
Ping.
We went to the theater, but we hardly ever watched the movie. We were too busy.
Talk about a food fight.
Oh, what numbskulls.
Oh, boy.
Hey, I threw a milk dud at you. I'm really funny.
Anyway,
this is when they had ushers. Now, you boys will have to behave yourselves.
Come by with the flashlight.
Get your feet off the chairs.
It only made us laugh when he came by. Stop laughing at me. So Ryan Gosling is going to be performing on the Oscars tonight. Billie Eilish, John Batiste is going to be performing on the Oscars tonight. We'll show all the highlights. If you don't watch it live tonight, we'll show all the highlights tomorrow morning on WGN-TV and when the Bob Surratt Show right here. It is Oscar Sunday. 10:22 Daylight Saving Time. And throughout the program today, we're going back for some of our A-list interviews with the Oscar nominees who may go home with statues tonight. I think there's a pretty good chance that Emma Stone is going to win one tonight. In the category of Best Actress, the nominees are Emma Stone for Poor Things, Carey Mulligan for Maestro, Sandra Huller for Anatomy of a Fall, Annette Bening for Naiad, and Lily Gladstone for Killers of the Flower Moon. It's possible that Lily Gladstone also could win. I think that's this is the only category that is not a done deal. There is still a lot of drama. A lot of people very supportive of Lily Gladstone, Native American, could make history tonight if she winds up winning for this movie. They want to give some love to this Martin Scorsese film. But Emma Stone, now Poor Things is not an easy movie to watch. To say that it's eclectic is an understatement. Somebody texted me earlier. Let me see if I can find it real quick. Somebody that went to see Poor Things last night. Oh, here it is. And says, Dean, saw Poor Things last night. Wow. It was like watching a pornographic version of Alice in Wonderland on acid. I don't know about the pornographic part, but it's very, very, very suggestive. That's for sure. And this the texter says, I'm still trying to figure it out. That's how I was when I saw the movie. My jaw was on the floor because of what they put out there. It's a very, very inventive, creative movie. And I think for that reason that Emma Stone could wind up winning the Academy Award tonight. It is an adventurous, courageous acting performance. So we'll see. It's going to be Lily Gladstone or it's going to be Emma Stone, that's for sure. Back when the movie came out, Emma Stone had just appeared on Saturday Night Live. And then we had a chat with her. This is right before the holidays. We had a nice little chat with her about the movie, and here is Oscar nominee Emma Stone. First of all, congratulations on SNL.
Thank
that
you.
That was so fun. You look like you have so much fun when you're on that show.
It's my favorite place in the whole world. I love it so much. It was really, special.
Yeah, right. I'm sorry, because it gives you so many different options and so many different opportunities to do different things?
Yeah, I mean, I just grew up loving, my mom watched SNL every weekend starting in 1975 with her family. And so when I was a kid, she introduced me to, you know, Gilda Radner and kind of like the 70s cast of SNL. So I'm obsessed with SNL through history, and it's just, it's such an incredible place to me. And I was 21 the first time I hosted. And so it just feels like it's been such a huge part of my life. I really love it there.
Yeah. You are a superstar on that show and in everything else, as if I didn't admire you enough. My mind was blown after seeing Poor Things. In my mind, what courage and boldness to take on a role like this for an actor. Is that how you view it also when you have such an unconventional kind of role?
I mean, I increasingly, as years have gone on, have become more and more drawn to things that feel like, you know, scary or challenging. Like, that's the only kind of stuff that's really kind of doing it for me at this point. And that doesn't always, you know, necessarily work out. But so I don't know if it's courage as much as just, you know, Yorgos is such an incredible filmmaker, and he's also a wonderful friend now, and I trust him so much. And Bella is just my favorite character of all time. And so that combination felt like a pretty lucky one.
Yeah, yet it did require you to do some things that at least I've never seen you do before.
Yeah.
When you see that on the page, is that what excites you / terrifies you as an actress, that you know this is what we're going to do today?
I think so. I mean, I think the thing that was sort of scariest to me was really tracking her journey in a way that lives up to the way that she's written, both in the, you know, in the novel, but also in Tony's screenplay. And so that was the bigger thing, was wanting to do her justice and you know, really and bring her to life in the way that I could see it in my head. You know, it's like sometimes you can see a painting in your head, but you can't necessarily paint it. So it's like that. Yeah, I think that was the scariest part for me, just because I.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I got to tell you, I mean, just watching you do this, and, you know, it was a little uncomfortable in the beginning, but as the movie went on, I got so into it, and I think I received this movie on so many different levels by the time it was done. It's a brilliant piece of filmmaking, so congratulations to you all. And you make me want to, like, try things that are scary and that, like, terrify me a little bit, so thank you for the inspiration.
Thank you so much. Do it.
You're great.
You can do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Happy holidays to you. Thank you so much for all that you do. We love you.
And you. Oh, thank you so much.
There is Emma Stone. We talked to her right just before Christmas time when her movie Poor Things came out. I'm telling you, I mean, it's I didn't know what to say when after I saw this movie. The more I thought about it, the more I just appreciated what an incredible piece of filmmaking this is by director Yorgos Lanthimos. The movie is nominated. He's nominated. Emma Stone is nominated. We'll see what happens with the results tonight. In the category, by the way, as long as we're talking about best actress nominees, for Best Supporting Actress, the nominees are Emily Blunt from Oppenheimer, Danielle Brooks from The Color Purple. She played the character that's Oprah played, Sophia, in the original movie. America Ferrara is nominated from Barbie, Jodie Foster for Naiad, and Divine Joy Randolph, the grieving mother from The Holdovers, which is such an incredible movie, really, really great movie. She's great in it. She's been winning all the awards, and I think that she will also win her first Academy Award tonight. Coming up, we're going to talk with Martin Scorsese and director Christopher Nolan and actor Cillian Murphy, Oppenheimer himself. And right after the news, we go back into the archives for an interview that we did in 2007 with singer Steve Lawrence. He passed away just the other day at the age of 88. Some memories of Steve Lawrence all coming up next. Did you like singer Steve Lawrence?
Yeah, he was one of those that was kind of just always around. You know, he was kind of perennial. Steve and Edie. And Edie Gourmet. My mother loved the two of them together.
Oh, I did too.
Yeah.
I did too.
Really enjoyed them.
They
were around for years. I think they had their own TV show for a while.
I don't remember. Yeah. But I'd be shocked if they didn't. They had been around for such a long time. They met when they were both young performers on the original Tonight Show with Steve Allen.
Is that right?
Did you know that?
On Steve Allen.
Steve, that was before Johnny Carson.
Way before Johnny Carson.
Steve Allen was the very first host of the Tonight Show, and I think it was one of the first late-night television shows. There was another one, I think, that preceded the Tonight Show called Broadway Open House. Don't ask me how I remember that.
I certainly don't.
I remember reading about it, that there was something before the Tonight Show. I'm pretty sure that was the name of it. But, you know, Steve Allen had this whole ensemble of characters, including Don Knotts, our favorite.
Mm-hmm.
He was on there as, like, the nervous guy. He was always the
boy, if anybody could do that, it would have been him.
It was so great. That he would parlay into, like, the incredible Mr. Limpet and, like, characters like that. But Don Knotts was one of his ensemble players. Tom Poston, Louis Nye. Who else was part of that Steve Allen ensemble? There was just a whole...
Boy, there's a name you haven't heard in years.
Right?
Louis Nye.
Louis Nye.
Man.
Yeah. Also known as Sonny Drysdale from...
He was Sonny Drysdale?
Yeah.
Boy, I'm going to have to go back into my archives.
Mr. and Mrs. Drysdale's role. I think it might have been Mrs. Drysdale's son from another husband.
She was always sitting around with the smoking jacket with the initials.
It was, yes. It was. Don't get me started on the Beverly Hillbillies, because that's another rabbit hole I can easily go down.
I know. Yes, indeed.
I was watching something, and they showed an old clip of
Steve Lawrence, Edie Gourmet, Dinah Shore, Steve Allen. Who else was on?
Dinah Shore had her own show.
And Southern. They were all, were singing the song, "This Could Be the Start of Something Big."
I think Steve Allen wrote that.
He did.
Yeah.
Yes, he did. A lot of wormholes were going down.
I know they are.
but Steve and Edie were, you know, part of this. They were walking through the studio in, I think they were doing some special shows in Los Angeles. Wow, this is really like super, super trivia that no one cares about. Except
well, you me. Sent me this video. You just prompted my memory. Some years back, you sent me the video of that.
And so
it's astounding.
Walking through the studio.
Walking through. Oh, just
that,
amazing.
That they
watch.
Were able to do that.
In, I know.
Had to be 1954
or something.
Something like
yeah.
that, right. That they were even able to technically pull that off was amazing. But that became sort of Steve and Edie's. It was Steve Allen's theme song, but Steve and Edie would sing it all the time as well. They sort of made it popular.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw it the other day. This was before I heard that Steve Lawrence had passed away. And I wonder if Steve Lawrence is still alive, you know? And I looked it up, and I was like, wow, he's still alive. And then the next day, the news
came out.
He
had passed away.
That he'd passed away from complications of Alzheimer's. So we'll remember Steve Lawrence. We're going to play back this interview that I did with him in 2007, which is absolutely delightful because of him. And here's some of his music as well, all when we come right back. An amazing song. Steve Lawrence and his late wife of 55 years, Edie Gourmet. Steve Lawrence died on Thursday, complications of Alzheimer's disease, according to a representative for the family. Steve Lawrence was really one of the last easy listening crooners. He performed mostly with his wife, Edie Gourmet, for the majority of their career together, with just beautiful harmony and beautiful songs. But Steve Lawrence was not only a singer, he was very adept at comedy. He appeared on all the variety shows and many of the sitcoms over the years. He was a more than regular guest on the old Carol Burnett show, appearing 39 times as a guest on the show. And if you ever, you know, see any of the reruns of that, and you happen to catch a Steve Lawrence rerun, he was just amazingly funny, really, really great. And he famously appeared in the Blues Brothers movie with John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd. He played the kind of the mob boss in that famous steam room scene, which was terrific. He just was a wonderful all-around performer. And I was lucky enough to talk with him a couple of times. The last time was in 2007. He was about to appear at the Paramount Theater in Aurora. And as you will hear, is just as friendly and nice and as charismatic as you may have seen him on television in the past. But a terrific old school conversation here as we remember the great Steve Lawrence. Steve Lawrence, welcome to WGN.
Thank you, Dean. I'm very happy to be on. WGN is the big boomer, boy. We hear that all over the country. That signal is extraordinary.
You know, it just makes me smile hearing your voice. It makes me feel good because I think of all the music. I think of all of your television appearances. I think of motion picture appearances. It's a warm, wonderful, welcoming sound just to hear your voice.
Thank you. I'm happy to hear yours as well, and I'm happy to be talking to a lot of folks out at WG land, you know, WGN land, and it goes a long way, so you don't know where there's a boundary there. But I'm happy to speak with you, and it's Chicago has always been a favorite city of Edie's and mine. And I was telling you just before we went on the air that we stay at the Drake Hotel, and the first stop we do is we pop right into the Cape Cod Room. It's absolutely sensational. And you know, the lovely thing about it is that when you go back to that town, as opposed to Las Vegas or New York or a lot of other towns, that city hasn't changed for me as a visitor. It's been just like it was when we left, you know.
When was the last time that you were here?
We were there a couple of years ago, about 2 years ago, and we're coming back to the Paramount Theater in Aurora next Friday and Saturday on the 26th and 27th of October.
I don't know if you know this, in the last couple of years, it's 80 degrees and sunny here every day now.
Really? You got warmer weather than we have in Las Vegas.
Mayor right Daley, I don't know how Mayor Daley did this. He's done something to the clouds here, and it's perfect, sunny, and 80 degrees here every day.
Well, if anybody can do it, anybody with the name Daley can make it happen.
That's very true. Do you have some favorite Chicago stories of appearing here? I mean, you must have appeared at some of the great and legendary clubs here.
Yeah, we were at the Chez Paris. I was at the Living Room, and it became, I guess, the Tradewinds prior to that. And we were at the Palmer House in Chicago proper in town, and Edie worked many years ago at the State Street Theater.
Wow, Chicago Theater on State Street, yeah.
Yeah, that's a long time ago. Oh. And of course, when they rehabbed the Chicago Theater,
yeah,
we were some of the people involved in that, and we performed there as well, and it was a great treat. Chicago audiences have always been very kind to me and Edie over the years.
Now, in your act that you'll be doing at the Paramount on the 26th and 27th,
yeah,
do you go down memory lane? Do you do the hits? Or you?
Yeah, because we find that the audience that comes to see us, you know, there's a couple of surprises, but we don't pass up on stuff that they come to hear. You know, like I once had a conversation many years ago with Nat King Cole. I said, "Don't you ever get tired of Mona Lisa and Too Young?" He says, "Hey, that's what they're coming to hear." I said, "Okay, I got you."
That's paying the bills. And what would those songs be for you and Edie?
Well, we can never dodge Go Away, Little Girl, or Blame It on a Bossa Nova, or If You Walked Into My Life, Portrait of My Love, More. I mean, there's a lot of... And, of course, some of the specials that we've done over the years on television, I might add some Emmy Award-winning specials.
Absolutely.
So we do some snippets from that as well. And so we managed to sneak in a couple of things that might be new to the audience as well.
Hip-hop? But, you guys doing hip-hop music now?
Excuse me, you want to ask me that again? We don't dance.
If you gave me any other response, I would be shocked. talking about through the years with Edie, do you mind if I ask how many years now you've been man and wife?
Well, this December, we will be celebrating our 50th wedding anniversary.
God bless you. Isn't that terrific? Wow.
Yeah. That's been a lot of wonderful music, a lot of wonderful times, and we've touched, on a scale of 1 to 10, we've touched all the numbers, and it's been a very terrific long run for us, and one that we're very proud of and very grateful for.
What's the secret? You know, we read about stars today, you know, they're married for about 2 minutes and filing for divorce, or, you know, these young stars du jour that come and go. You guys professionally and personally have seemingly, you know, really defied the odds.
Well, I don't know as that's an answerable question. I think a relationship works or it doesn't, and I'm just thrilled that ours works. But if I can quote a line that Edie used, it absolutely was, it's humorous, and it killed me. Somebody said, "What do you attribute your longevity in your marriage to?" And Edie said, "Well, in all the years that we've been married, Steve and I have never, ever had an in-depth conversation."
Well, there you go. There's the key, ladies and gentlemen.
That's it. No, I really, Dean, I really don't know how to answer that because, as I said, you know, I think, you know, Edie and I have very similar backgrounds before we were even married. We grew up almost on parallel lines. You know, our upbringing was similar.
Mm-hmm.
Our tastes professionally and personally are very, and of course, there's a great love that we share and a great friendship. I think a sense of humor is very important. It gets you through a lot of lows, I wouldn't know how to legislate that in a sentence as to why it works, but I'm just thrilled that ours does because we're the best of friends in addition to everything else.
No, that's fantastic. Congratulations on the 50 years right around the corner. I was thinking about some of the most memorable things that I've seen you in. And your appearances on the Carol Burnett Show have to be way up there. What are some of your best memories from? How many appearances on the Burnett Show? Did you ever stop and count?
I haven't counted them, but Carol told me one time that I was probably the most used guest appearance on all of her shows. She was on for 11 years. And I don't know, I must have done 2-3 a year or at least or more. individually, and then Edie did her own, and Schatz, and I, it's hard to say, but I think my experiences with Carol, because I knew Carol, you know, much when we were all starting out. So we were friends much before she became Carol Burnett and I became Steve Lawrence. And so we had a personal relationship and a good friendship, and Carol and her husband Joe at the time, Hamilton, and Edie and I kind of grew up together, and our children kind of grew up as well and alongside each other. And so it was a long relationship. But I must say, the comedy sketches that I did, we did a takeoff of every gangster movie they made in the 30s and 40s and 50s.
Nobody wore a trench coat better than you did on that show. Trench coat and the hat. I can see it right now.
That's it. And Carol, for one of my birthdays a couple of years ago, she presented me with, it was three VHS tapes filled with every sketch I ever did.
Oh, wow.
So it was a lot of shows.
That's fantastic. And, of course, one of our favorite motion picture appearances in which you performed as a Chicago connection, of course, in the classic Blues Brothers.
Yeah, that has become a cult following all over the world. As a matter of fact, when Edie and I went to Japan to do some concerts, we got off at the airport and were walking through the airport, and a lot of the Japanese people were pointing to me and go, "Oh, Maurice Lime, Blue Brother. They didn't know that I sang from a hole in the wall. They only knew me from the...
You were the naked guy in the steam room.
That's it. I was not naked.
Not completely. You know.
I was in the steam room with a towel and gold chains.
Right.
And the guys were sitting there with their black hats and dark glasses and towels.
Exactly. Do you have particular memories of making that film? I can't believe how it's over 25 years, maybe 30 years now since
that. Yeah, that's about right. It was a great experience. I mean, with Belushi and Dan Aykroyd and that whole company plays. It was just as much fun when we were not filming as when we were. And I'm sorry to a degree they didn't have a lot of outtakes that were made available, because some of them were hysterical. You know, those two guys were really committable. I mean, you know, they really, if you could get any two strangers in the street to sign a piece of paper, they'd be in a home.
Yeah, exactly right. Just thinking about your many appearances and your many associations through the years, I was thinking about you and Frank Sinatra, and I have in my hand your album on which you sing Sinatra songs, which is stunningly beautiful, by the way.
Thank you very much.
I really, really enjoy it. I was listening to it in the car and just really enjoying it.
I'm very proud of that album on a lot of levels, first of all. I waited what I thought was the proper amount of time after Frank passed away to pay tribute to him. But many years ago, Frank was, you know, he's probably one of the most gracious, kindest guys. I mean, you've heard all the other stories about him, but I never saw that side of him. And he, many years ago, we became very good friends over the 40-some-odd years or so that we knew each other. He presented me with a bunch of his orchestrations from his personal library, and he just I don't know, it was probably one of the greatest compliments I've ever had, and I was just thrilled to pay that tribute to him on record. You know,
it's a beautiful release. Steve Lawrence sings Sinatra. Do you have a favorite?
Well, they're all my favorite, but I love the first cut on that CD. It's Under My Skin, which is written by Cole Porter and orchestrated by Nelson Riddle. It's one of my favorite songs. And one of my favorite orchestrations that was in Frank's library, and he knew that, so that he was very, very sure to include that. You know,
Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet at the Paramount Arts Center in Aurora on the 26th and 27th, and tickets are available through the box office, through all the usual places. Steve, it's a pleasure to say hi, and I hope next time you're in Chicago, we can drag you out of the Drake Hotel down here to our WGN studios, and we'll do this face-to-face.
Well, if you can't, you'll join me at the Cape Cod Room.
Nothing wrong with that. This is the perfect show today to figure out how to change the time on your microwave ovens.
I already did that. I already did that.
Did you really?
Mm-hmm.
When did you change your times? Last night?
About 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon.
Oh. Look at you, overachiever.
And I also rewound my watch.
You rewound your watch? What?
It stopped that. It stopped the
what
wild.
What are you talking about, Ward Cleaver?
Rewound the watch.
You rewound your watch.
For those kids out there.
for all you youngsters out there. And you have to wind your watch every so often.
Oh,
you know?
I can't get Google on my watch, Uncle Dean.
No, seriously.
Do you really have a wind-up watch?
No, I don't. Well, I do, but it's an antique. Actually, it was my grandfather's that was passed along to my dad.
Oh,
and,
nice.
And now I have it. It's at home, you know, just kind of.
Pocket watch?
There, I do have a pocket watch also that was my grandpa's, yes.
In case you ever become a train conductor, of course you do.
Well, they've seen me in the newsroom, you know, looking at something in my hand, and it wasn't my phone. It was the
what?
It was the pocket
watch.
What did
you just say?
It was looking at the watch.
That's why I close my door sometimes.
Blame me, I wouldn't want to hear that either.
Oh, you missed the sing-along here we had a little while ago. Was Sing Along with Steve. We were Go Away, Little Girl.
Andy, were you familiar with that version or just the Donny Osmond?
Just the Donny Osmond version.
Do you remember the version by The Happenings?
No.
You don't?
I don't think so.
Oh, Jack remembers. I'll bet Jack knows.
Jack hasn't understood anything that's happened on today's show. Producer Jack Hammer.
Yeah.
The Hammer.
I just wait to hear for the hammer, and then I lock it back in.
Yeah.
Jack, no. You don't know that version, Jack?
Like Dean said, the last 2 hours, I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
Well, you certainly know the group The Happenings,
usually right around 9:05. Let me just tell you about producer Jack. At about 9:05, his eyes roll back into his head, and they really don't come back out again until about like 12:57 before the show's over.
I do the heavy lifting beforehand. Then once we're on the way, take off.
You understood. You understood the Barbie song, didn't you?
I mean, yeah, but I didn't see Barbie. But I've heard the song.
Oh, this is perfect. You and Schwani can go and see it.
Oh, there's an idea.
There's a fun double date, right? This should be fun. Andy, have you seen it?
I have not.
All right, threesome today.
Mm-hmm. I have not.
Going to see the Barbie movie before the Academy Awards tonight. I love that. Should be fun.
Well, anyway, back to setting the
but
clock
you were
microwave.
You were singing Go Away, Little Girl.
Oh, we were singing Go Away, Little Girl.
Yeah. That's nice. Can you recreate a little of that for us?
Why, sure.
Go ahead.
Andy.
Oh, yeah. You're a solo actor.
Go away, little girl. Go away, little girl. I'm not supposed to be along with you.
Alone with you. It's alone with you.
That, too.
Did we run out of time for the sing-along portion of today's show?
I think we ran out of time, period.
Years ago, I think we did. Going back for some of the great songs from the movies this morning, getting ready for the Academy Awards tonight. The Academy Awards start at 6 o'clock tonight. That's a first time ever. Usually it starts later. So if you are going to be watching the awards ceremony, and know that. If you're not, remember that I'll be recapping it all for you tomorrow. I'll have all of the winners, the losers, the moments, all the highlights, both on WGN-TV Morning News and on Bob Surratt's show when we do our little entertainment segment every weekday morning from 8 until 8:30. I wanted to talk about Oscar hosts. Because I definitely have had my favorites through the years. When I go back, do you know that Jack Benny hosted the Oscars once?
That doesn't surprise me.
1944. It was on radio only. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Bob Hope did it for several years, radio only. Of course, he became a staple doing it later on television. But for the radio only years, Jack Benny, Bob Hope, Jimmy Stewart.
Boy, wouldn't that have been something?
Wow.
That would have been amazing.
Wow.
That was radio still.
Radio.
When he did it.
Radio, yeah. For many years, it wasn't broadcast at all. Isn't that amazing now? Because it's such a staple and one of the most watched programs of the year. But for years, it wasn't even broadcast at all.
There's a great picture of one of the very, very first Academy Awards dinners in Hollywood. I think it's in the old Biltmore Hotel in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Have you seen this, Dean? This an amazing picture. It's blown up and put on the wall there in the lobby. And, you know, people like a young Jimmy Stewart is there. Henry Fonda, Cary Grant.
That's cool.
You know, Greta Garbo. Some of the silent film stars there, Mary Pickford, people like that. Wow.
I like some of the like those classic old black and white pictures. I'm looking at a photo right now, black and white photo, with Gloria Swanson, Cecil B. DeMille, Bob Hope. I don't know who a couple of these people are, but it's from the 25th Academy Awards. 25th Annual Academy Awards. And they're just like such classic-looking pictures.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yep. Yep. I can visualize that.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So Bob Hope did it. Oh, wait. I have a listing here someplace of who's done it. Who do you think has hosted the Oscars most? Let me do it this way. Bob Hope hosted it most, 19 times. Who hosted it second most? So Bob Hope is 19 times.
Yeah.
Second, Billy Crystal.
Oh, well, yeah. I was
going to say that too.
I was going to say, but I...
Billy Crystal hosted it 9 times.
Yeah.
Johnny Carson hosted it 5 times. Whoopi Goldberg, 4 times. Jack Lemmon hosted it 4 times. Do you even remember Jack Lemmon hosting the Oscars?
No. No.
Yeah, I don't either. Jimmy Kimmel, who is hosting tonight, 3 times. Tonight will make his 4th. Steve Martin, 3 times. Jerry Lewis, 3 times. I don't remember Jerry Lewis doing it. And David Niven, 3 times.
Niven would have been one of those very smooth, gracious hosts.
Very classy.
Yeah.
Wasn't it David Niven who was on stage when The Streaker came out?
I think he was.
In the 1970s, yes. He was presenting an award. This was, I don't know, 70,
I saw
73, 74, something like that. This is when streaking, you know, running naked
places. Yeah, they ran right by him and waved at the camera.
Which I would like to get an early word on when we do our Tree Time shows this year. Be careful around the blue spruce. You're going to get a scratch. But if anyone wants to streak during the Tree Time show, that's something we've never done on the show before.
We've married off people.
Yep.
We've eaten very weird food.
Yep.
But we haven't gone streaking yet.
Yep. Well, we're not going to go streaking.
No way.
Nobody wants to see that. You know, I find with most streakers, it's usually the people you really don't want to see.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was much like when we used to be over in Tribune Tower, now the Michigan Avenue mattress store over there, when we used to do the show in the window. And, you know, you get a few, usually at least one person a week would come by and they would put their butt up against the window. Thinking they are the first person ever to do that.
So clever.
I don't think in the entire time that we were there, it's ever a butt that you want to see.
No. No. Of course, that would be when you were doing the show.
What are you saying? That I attract a certain...
When you were down there, why? It happened every Sunday.
What are you talking about?
It happened every Sunday.
Well, most every Sunday. Yes. I think I had a lot of spillover from the Saturday night. The drunkies would still be out on Michigan Avenue then.
I will always remember looking at our closed circuit TV. You were sitting down there. I was in the newsroom, and you were sitting by the control board there and making all kinds of faces at some kid that was
That was my go-to move.
I was in the middle of a newscast, and I had all I could do to just keep from just breaking up.
That was my go-to move. That's my Uncle Dean move. Kids come up to the window, and they're looking inside. They don't expect the guy inside to be making funny faces.
And they ran away screaming.
No, they start making funny faces back.
Mm-hmm.
And the parents would get mad because I'm acting foolish and encouraging their child to act foolish. You know, kids just want to have a little fun.
That's my kids. That was so funny to
That's
see.
My
that.
Kids love their Uncle Dean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure they do.
I got some funny faces I can make to you this morning.
You always have.
Like, you'd like.
I can't see you today. We don't have the screen up.
Really?
No.
Yeah.
No. Andy's here. I'm here. No one in the traffic office, and I see Navy Pier.
Yeah.
And you can't see me?
Through the magic mirror. Yeah.
So if I gave you this peace sign that I'm giving you right now.
We'll have to assume that you're giving us the peace sign.
I have to assume that it's a very gracious gesture.
That it's both fingers? Is that what you're
saying? Yes, that's
correct.
Right.
Correct.
Or maybe all five held up in a fist? No, not in a fist. Oh. In an offer of generosity and friendship.
Yeah, that's me.
Sure.
Generosity and friendship, that's me. Sorry, you can't see it.
No, I can't see it.
I can see you on the screen. We have screens because we're all in different studios.
Yeah, we don't see you.
We don't see you.
And Schwani, I can see, is wearing a sweatshirt or something that says 1940 on it.
Right.
Is there some significance to that?
That was the
year. Is that when you were born?
No, you know better than that. That was the year I got this sweatshirt at Isle Royale National Park. And that was the year that the island became a national park.
Oh, well, that's nice. Mm-hmm. You know, can I throw another year at you of significance?
Certainly.
The year of 1895.
1895.
March 11th, 1895. So this would be tomorrow, 1895. Shemp Howard was born.
Oh, is that right?
Shemp from the Three Stooges would have been 129 years old tomorrow.
Oh, man.
Well, thank you for enlightening us on
My pleasure. Thank you, Facebook, for continuing to provide me with things I would have otherwise never known.
All that information.
So useful. And so many pictures of feet to enjoy also on Facebook and other stuff that you don't really want to see. It's Oscar Sunday, and that means we're going back into the archives for some of the interviews that we've done with Oscar nominees like Martin Scorsese. One of the big movies of 2023-24, Killers of the Flower Moon, starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Robert De Niro, Lily Gladstone, many others. The story, a true story of the Osage Nation and a series of murders taking place, fueled by greed, by oil. In really incredible movie in many ways. Long movie, 3.5 hours. But incredibly well done, as you might expect from the director, Martin Scorsese, who is still turning out some amazing, amazing films. Just before this movie came out, it was late last year, we had a nice conversation with Mr. Scorsese about Killers of the Flower Moon.
I'm so interested in how you chose this story, what compelled you, and when you choose stories, what it is that you look for?
Well, in a case like this, the book was given to me by my manager, and Leo DiCaprio was attached to it, and Leo and I had good experiences in the past, so to speak. So, you know, I took it very seriously. But, you know, I also am a product of Hollywood cinema, besides Italian and British and others, but mainly Hollywood cinema of the 1940s and 50s. I was born in 42. A key factor were the genres. And one of my favorite genres, or maybe the favorite for me, was the Western. Now, I think the Western, that cycle of American Westerns, with that history and that point of view, et cetera, good and bad, it ended with Sam Peckinpah's Wild Bunch. So, in a way, I'd always wanted to make something to do with the West. I even shot Alice Doesn't Live Anymore in the Southwest of the country. So for me, I was always drawn to it. I became aware of the state of the Native Americans in the mid-70s, having to be being involved in a couple of days venture there in Pine Ridge in Dakota. And I was very young, and I didn't quite understand that there was a big difference between what I saw there and what I grew up on Westerns. And so for years, I was trying to put it together as part of the history of this country, because I'm fascinated by that sense of history and how things and cultures change. Can they assimilate? If you assimilate, do you lose too much of the original nature of the cultures? All of these things. And so ultimately, when I got this book, I saw that it had the possibility of really delving into this world, but had to be a world that dealt with the Osage and their culture and their values and their rituals in a very, very specific way. And I had to meet them. And when I met them, I found them to be open and actually trusting. And so if they trusted me, I felt that was an honor, and I had to live up to that. And I don't mean in a hagiographic way, but how to explore this story, which has horrendous things in it, how to explore this as an example of our human behavior and our behavior as people coming from Europe. Who are we to have let this happen and to continue to think this way, you know? And so having said that, that's what kept driving me into the picture. But what kept me curious about everything was not only the European Americans and Bill Hale and Ernest and all of them, but the Osage and how they lived, and also how the nature of that world was something where people were all involved. In other words, I keep mentioning in the book, it was a matter of the Bureau of Investigation coming in to find out who did it. And I kept thinking, well, who didn't do it? It appeared that they all did it. We all do it somehow. Or can we? Are we all capable of doing it? Are we capable when we're put to the test? And sometimes we don't know what the test is, you see. And so it's just exploring who we are.
Yeah. You talk about these guys that you usually work with, like Leo DiCaprio, Blake De Niro. What did these guys bring? Because you do love to work with them and include them in your projects.
Well, Bob wanted to be involved, and he loved the idea of the character. We didn't have it quite down in the first drafts, but eventually we got it. And the fact that this character, Bill Hale, William Hale, the king of the Osage Hills, was, and this is what the Osage pointed out to me originally, they said, don't forget, Bill Hale was one of their best friends. And here we have The Irishman, and here we have, you know, other films I made where in Goodfellas, where people, your best friend is the one that comes and takes you down.
It is Martin Scorsese, who is possibly going home with an Oscar tonight for his film Killers of the Flower Moon. De Niro is nominated, so is Lily Gladstone. We'll see what happens. We've got more Oscar nominee A-list interviews coming up, and Andy Mazur's Oscar Sports coming up next. We should have some sort of special music, you know, like when there's breaking news on CNN or something like that. Bum, ba-da-bum, bum, bum. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for a very special presentation. Andy Mazur's annual presentation of Oscar Sports, in which he takes the Oscar-nominated Best Pictures of the Year and works the titles into an actual sports cast.
Yes.
Are you excited about this?
You know, this was a little tougher this year than in years past. There's a couple that were a little difficult, so we'll try here and see what you think.
It's nice that you step up and do something special. I don't want to say Schwani does absolutely nothing for the Academy Awards show, probably our biggest show of the year.
Super Bowl.
That's true.
Entertainment Super Bowl.
Yeah. You okay?
Go ahead. Go ahead. Just go on.
I know you were taking a nap, but that's all right.
Just go on.
Okay. Don't mind if I do.
No, just go ahead. Just continue.
So I'm just going to read the Best Picture nominees.
Okay.
So then people can listen for them in your well-crafted, well-written, special effort that you put into the show.
Yes.
For Oscar Sunday. The Best Picture nominees. You okay, Schwani, in there?
I'm fine.
Okay, just making sure. It's so hard to keep him interested in the show.
I know.
The Best Picture nominees: American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie,
The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest. And now, Andy Mazur's Oscar Sports.
All right, Dean, thanks very much. Well, those of you that thought the Blackhawks would be a contender this early into their rebuild were reading some pretty heavy American fiction. While the team has enjoyed a little success this season, they were beaten last night 4-1 by the Capitals, and of course will be in action tonight against the Coyotes 4:30 pregame here on WGN. Well, in past lives, Northwestern was never a contender for an NCAA tournament bid, but now they've gone all Oppenheimer on the Big Ten, you know, dropping bombs. Winning their 12th game last night, 90-66 over Minnesota. They'll find out more about their seeding in the Big Ten tournament a little later today. NCAA Selection Sunday, that is a week from today, and those that are chosen to dance will be elated, though the holdovers will all be disappointed, with many fans dejectedly saying, ah, the poor things. Yes, it is sad. Well, after 3 years with the Bears, will Justin Fields' story be the anatomy of a fall? Ooh. Or will he get to prove whether he can become the maestro of the offense? Only Ryan Poles knows at this point. And with NFL free agency beginning this week, Poles has zeroed in on the safety position as the zone of interest for the team after letting Eddie Jackson go last month. Iowa's Caitlin Clark continues to break records, including becoming the all-time leader in three-pointers made in a single season. 164. She passed Steph Curry and Darius McGee, who each had 162. The guys did it in 36 games. Clark has done it in 31. She has become more popular than Barbie ever was with young girls across the country. Fans of the movie Slapshot, which I think should have won an Oscar for Best Picture, will remember the character Dave Killer Kowalski. He played for the Charlestown Chiefs, the toughest team in the Federal League. Well, here's one to ponder. What if Kowalski skated through a garden, which is not easy to do? Then the owner of that garden, Ralph Cramden, came out to yell at him. What would you have? One of these days, the killer of the flowers is going to the moon.
Oh, wow. Wow, wow, wow. Nice.
And that is your look at the Oscar sports.
Wow.
Brilliant.
Wowie, wow, wow, wow.
Well, it needed some setup there, but you know. I think in the end it worked out all well.
Well, anytime you can get a honeymooner's mention, you could have only kissed up to us more. There was a Mayberry reference in there.
11:41, daylight saving time. Check your clocks, check your devices, check your appliances. It's Oscar Sunday. Academy Awards begin at 6 o'clock Chicago time today. Jimmy Kimmel hosting. If you don't watch the Academy Awards, I will have the full recap for you tomorrow morning on WGN-TV Morning News and also on Bob Surratt's entertainment segment that I do with him every weekday morning from 8 until 8:30. We'll cover it all for you, the winners, the losers, all the special moments. And we continue today with recapping some of our A-list interviews that we've done this year with the Academy Award nominees. I think the big winner tonight is going to be Oppenheimer. I don't think you have to be a genius to figure this out. They've won everything with, you know, during the entire awards season. And I think they will continue tonight winning Best Picture, tonight winning Best Supporting Actor for Robert Downey Jr., winning Best Director for Christopher Nolan. They're going to win all kinds of technical awards tonight. And I think the Best Actor Award also will go to the man who brought us Oppenheimer, Cillian Murphy, the Irish actor. He is an amazing actor. He's been in so many Christopher Nolan movies. He is up tonight against Bradley Cooper for his role in Maestro, Colman Domingo for his role in Rustin, Paul Giamatti for The Holdovers, and Jeffrey Wright for American Fiction. All of them stellar, stellar, stellar performances. But there is something about the intensity of what Cillian Murphy gave us in this film that I think is going to put it over the top, and he's going to walk away with his very first Academy Award. As I said, he is a veteran of several Christopher Nolan movies, and when I talked with him in Los Angeles just before the movie came out, we went back and talked about how he got involved in this particular project.
Me in September 21, and then he flew over from LA to Dublin to give me the script. So I had from September 21 till February 22 when we started shooting. So I had 6 months more or less. And then it was a long process because there's so much stuff available, you know, online, so many books, so much archival material about Oppenheimer. So I just dove into it. And then obviously there was the script. And then I flew out and back to LA, and we did a lot of camera tests and makeup tests and costume tests, trying to get that silhouette and look right. So it was a long process, but a very stimulating one.
Is it more daunting for you as an actor to play a real person as opposed to somebody fictional?
I think there's a level of responsibility that comes with that for sure, particularly with this character, because he's so iconic, you know, and what happened in 45 changed the world, and so there is a level of responsibility, but you kind of have to shake it off after a while and just go after it and go and serve the script. That's your, I suppose, your you know, that's your obligation, the yeah. most important one.
What is what's the Christopher Nolan experience like for you as a director? I mean, you're one of, I don't exactly call you one of his regulars, but
yeah.
you've had a little more experience than many others.
He's the best. I mean, he's kind of phenomenal. He's one in a million. I think he may be the perfect director. You know, he's brilliant with actors. He's a brilliant writer. He's amazing visually. He tells stories unlike anybody else, and he tells them on this huge canvas, but yet they're really emotionally engaging. You know, I started working with Chris 20 years ago, so it's been a massive part of my life, and this is our sixth picture together.
It's probably a little shorthand between you, I would guess.
That's it. That's right? What you get from re-collaboration is that shorthand, that trust. Trust is the most important one. Mm-hmm. You know, I really trust him, and I hope he feels the same about me. And so it means you go straight to the work. You don't have to talk about any other stuff or get to know each other. Any small talk is just straight to the work, and that really helps.
Yeah. Do you think there are some lessons to be had, in addition to learning about Oppenheimer himself, some lessons to be learned for those of us today that are worried about, you know, nuclear war, the arms race, the possibility of all of this, what it means today?
Yeah. I actually believe that films should ask the questions and not give the answers, and I think this is what the film does. It's not prescriptive, but it does provoke, and I'm very proud of that, because it's entertaining, but it makes you think.
There is Cillian Murphy. I suspect that by the time the day is over, he will be Academy Award winner, Cillian Murphy, for his role in that motion picture, all directed by the great Christopher Nolan, who gave us the Dark Knight movies, many of which he shot right here in Chicago. In fact, kept a lot of the Gotham City vehicles and helicopter right next door to WGN Television. I'll never forget one day we were sitting there and we saw the Batmobile drive by the office. Looking out the window, we saw the Batmobile. And then, you know, it ran outside to, you know, see what that was about. And we see all of the Gotham City police cars and Gotham City ambulances and, you know, Gotham City everything. They had rented some storage area that was literally right next door to WGN for all of that. And then later began to use our helipad at WGN-TV for the Batcopter. And the Gotham City Police Department police copter. So we've got a kind of a WGN connection with that. But Christopher Nolan not only gave us those fantastic movies, he gave us Memento and Interstellar and Inception, and Dunkirk was one of his great movies, I thought, Tenet, and now Oppenheimer. He is the odds-on favorite to win tonight an Academy Award for Best Director. It'll be the first time that he has honored such. And just before Oppenheimer came out, we had a great chat with the great Christopher Nolan.
WGN Channel 9.
That's right. We still tell stories of how you used our parking lot for the helicopters and vehicles and
all the
good old days. And I have to say, I did think about when you blew up half of Chicago for a dark night last night. It's like, oh, he's still blowing things up.
Still blowing things up.
Yeah, exactly. Talk to me about the making of this, because I mean, the storytelling of this, the way that you tell the story is quite provocative and quite interesting. How do you approach telling this story, which is fairly well known, but to make it so visceral?
For me, the key to it was getting in his head, taking J. Robert Oppenheimer, who's an ambiguous figure. His story is full of paradox. It's full of tragedy and triumph. It's a mixture of ethical dilemmas and you know, a man who's at the very center of one of the biggest shifts in humankind's relationship with the universe, frankly. So how do you get into that world? To me, it's let's get in his head. Let's see things from his experience. The story is one we know the broad strokes of, but his personal relationship, his engagement with the Manhattan Project and everything that changed about our world. I was working from a book called American Prometheus by Kai Bird and Martin Sherwood. And early on in that book, you come to a passage that makes it clear that Los Alamos, which would become the birthplace of the atomic bomb and is still to this day a very important laboratory for defense and production of weapons, it was a place he liked to go camping with his brother. It was that personal to him. And he just said, if I could find a way to combine physics in New Mexico, my life would be complete. Getting into the story in the personal way, that to me was the way in.
Talk to me a little bit about the filmmaking itself.
Yeah.
And the explosion itself, that you did without CGI. Mm. How did you create that?
Well, we don't want to give away all the tricks.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to use CGI.
Why didn't you want to use it?
Well, the thing with the CGI is it's animation. It's incredibly versatile. It's a very powerful tool. But inherently, it tends to feel a bit safe, not that threatening. That's why it's tricky to use in horror films, things like that. And when it comes to the Trinity explosion, this is, for the people who witnessed it, it's one of the most beautiful and terrifying things simultaneously. And I challenged my visual effects supervisor and my special effects supervisor to say, okay, take CG off the table. How can we give this imagery the beauty, the sort of hypnotic beauty, but also the threat, the feeling of danger to it? And so we looked to real-world solutions. They found some very brilliant solutions, some of them very small, microscopic, things that stood in for larger things, and some of them very, very big and very explosive.
But also done with restraint and respect and dignity. I mean, it would have been very easy to make it a horrific moment, and you chose not to do that at all.
Well, what I'm trying to do, without giving away too much about the Trinity test itself, which is obviously the centerpiece of the film, and we knew it had to be a showstopper and you had to really involve people, but we really wanted to be in their heads as to how they were experiencing it. Ooh. And the film is a film about consequences, and sometimes it's about the delay between the action and then the consequences that result. And so they're in a particular mindset. They're focused. These scientists and the military people, you know, Matt Damon's General Groves, Cillian Murphy's Oppenheimer, they're coming together with this massive team, and they work for years and spend billions of dollars, billions in 1945 dollars, for this one moment to see if they can make this thing work. And so there's an incredible focus in a very particular way. And that's where the beauty and the terror comes from in one set of images.
Yeah, it's amazing. Not only in the telling of Oppenheimer's story, but how it relates to the world today and all the things that they talked about then that we're still dealing with.
Thank you.
There is Christopher Nolan talking about his soon-to-be Academy Award-winning motion picture, Oppenheimer. He is soon-to-be Academy Award-winning director, Christopher Nolan. It's going to be a big night. The movie was nominated, I think, 11 Academy Awards in all. And, you know, it could wind up being a record breaker, depending on how many it takes home tonight. I think Titanic is still the record breaker, you know, the gold standard to match of how many Academy Awards a film can win.
So we'll see what happens with that tonight. We've got the segment that we do every single year, actually every year that since I've been on WGN, which has been, 33 years, something like that now. We started this off on an Oscar Sunday. I would come on the air on a Sunday after Roy Leonard's show, the king of entertainment here on WGN for 31 years. And so I would come on after that. He had covered the whole entertainment scene. So I tried to take a different angle to it. And we did a segment on famous food scenes from the movies. That turned into our Food Time show, which we have done. So this was actually the very first food segment that we did on WGN. It was food from the movies. And every year that we've done this, I keep thinking that this is going to run out of gas. But every year that we do this, the phone lines go crazy. The text lines go crazy of people remembering their favorite food movies or food scenes from movies. That's what we're going to get into coming up after 12 o'clock. So be thinking about this. If you've got some favorites, would love to hear about those. And we've got so much more still to come for you between now and 1 o'clock. I'm glad you're here today. It is 11:56, daylight saving time on WGN. Somebody texted in and said that Andy Mazur should get an Oscar for writing.
I agree. I agree.
Well, thank you.
His genius Oscar sports cast that he did, incorporating all of the Best Picture nominee titles into a sports cast that we had on a little while ago.
I'd like to thank the Academy. I'd like to thank the Texters.
Play the music to play the music to get them off. we'll post that later so you can
cool.
Listen to it over and over and over again. When I say you, I mean Andy.
Yes, exactly.
Andy will go home and listen to it over
again
and over.
And again.
I'll dissect it so I can be better next year.
Better next year. Very nice.
Always room for improvement.
Always. There's a sports anniversary. I can remember exactly where I was when this happened. I don't know why.
Yeah.
The Joe Frazier Muhammad Ali fight.
Mm.
Fight of the century.
Yeah.
March 8th, 1971. It took over the world. Everybody, literally everybody all over the world, was so focused on this matchup.
Yeah, I mean, it was incredible. Muhammad Ali was just such a, he transcended sports, obviously. This was probably the most famous athlete in the world. And that's, even including later in his life, you have Michael Jordan was pretty popular around the world, but Muhammad Ali was the original. I mean, everybody was, whether you liked him or not, just to kind of hear the banter. And he was a pretty good fighter, too, to go along with all that personality.
Right.
So it was, this was a big fight.
Madison Square Garden went 15 rounds. Frazier knocked down Ali with a left hook and won by unanimous decision, which was also a big deal. A
huge deal,
yeah. Because Ali talked such a big game. You know, that he was the greatest and nobody could touch him. And then Frazier, wins the match, which set up other fights after that.
And that's probably the best part of it for everybody, because those fights that they had later on were pretty good, too. So, yeah. Every once in a while, it looks bad for the champ or the former champ at that point. But, there's going to be a rematch.
Boy, I remember that. Just I was with some buddies and we were listening on a transistor radio.
Oh, wow.
I don't even know if it was available. Was it available on regular
I'm not sure
TV
if that was one of those
guys. Was,
wasn't might have been on ABC? Because ABC used to broadcast
Howard
a lot
Cosell.
Of those. Howard Cosell was big, and they had the fight doctor, Freddie Pacheco, for a while down there. And I'm trying to see if it was televised.
I don't remember if it was.
Well, here's something for you today, too. I mean, we're talking about the Oscars and entertainment. Apparently, Frank Sinatra was there ringside and had a camera. He was taking pictures for Life magazine.
Holy smokes.
There were Kennedys in the building.
Of course there were.
Diana Ross, Woody Allen. The Moonwalkers from Apollo 14 were there.
Didn't Diana Ross fight Woody Allen?
I think that was the undercard. That was the first fight of the day, yeah. Yeah, lots of money was on Diana Ross that day, I'll tell you that.
Amazing.
I remember listening to updates on the fight.
Yeah.
Not the live blow-by-blow account, literally, but there were updates that, you know, they'd break in every 15 minutes
on
or
all,
so.
All stations were doing it. Like it was, a news bulletin.
So. Yeah. Well,
because it sort of was.
It was. I'm imagining they would get, updates from the wire services and then go on the air with it.
Yeah, that was, you know what, the kind of interest that there was in that, and what year did I say that was?
1971.
Yep.
I mean, think about what kind of media that we had back then. You know, very limited. It was pretty much the big networks
right. And
local stations, and that's about it. We certainly didn't have, global coverage or satellites or, cable or anything like that, to the extent that we now do and have so many news resources. But it was kind of like when a space flight would take off, or we would follow what Apollo 11 was doing or something it had that kind of same kind of interest for me. It did, at least anyway.
Boxing became very niche and very specific when pay-per-view started, because the casual Ali fans and the casual Sugar Ray Leonard fans and Leonard Hearns back in those days probably weren't going to fork over whatever money it was to watch the fight, but the diehards did, and it kind of separated everybody, because there used to be boxing every weekend on Wide World of Sports. You could watch, Ali, and you could watch Michael Spinks and everybody else that was popular back in those
Michael
days.
Michael Spinks, wow.
Yeah, I mean, but you didn't get a chance to see it because you had to pay for it, and a lot of people didn't want to do that.
Right. And now, didn't I hear that Mike Tyson's going to be doing a fight again?
Yeah, he's coming back to fight a YouTube star. It's all a Netflix thing. Netflix is trying to dabble in sports, and I think they have a bigger plan for
wrestling, right?
Wrestling, and I think they want to get into other sports as well. And they feel that this is going to draw attention. It's going to draw attention maybe for the wrong reasons, but...
Because Mike Tyson is almost 60 years old.
Yeah, he's like 58, I think, yeah.
And this YouTuber, I'm guessing,
he's younger,
in his 20s or something?
I tell you what, at 58 or 56 or whatever he is, I'm still not getting in the ring with that guy.
I would not want to be the person
Mike
Tyson.
No way.
Yeah, I agree with that.
No way.
That said... At our next Tree Time broadcast, Schwani and I are gonna set up a ring out in the parking lot, and we're gonna settle this once and for all.
Yes. Oh, I've always after wanted 40, to do boxing play by play.
After 40, it's gonna be 43 years this year here. So once
that we've
and for
known
all,
each other,
yes. So we're finally going to settle.
Oh, that's awesome. And one corner.
Whoa, Larry Cheese.
No wild hyacinth is involved with this.
There we go, down the Three Stooges,
again.
How fun would that be, though, Schwani?
Oh, it would be. And then we would have Bust Off as the referee.
Hey, I love you guys.
Bust Off.
Sure, you can have turkey and anything you want.
All right, I'm going to start training. I predict I've taken you down in the first round.
You in training with Burgess Meredith,
Dean,
right?
Dean Richards, float like a butterfly, sting like a bee.
Oh, man.
You heard it here first.
Who's going to promote this fight? Who's going to be the promoter?
I want you to be my Burgess Meredith, Andy.
The body.
That's what
you need, a manager.
I'm 100% into this, but only for the comedy.
Yeah, I'm not cutting anybody. Let's put it that way.
Andy and I in some meat locker, beating up sides of beef.
What's the matter, kid? Are you nervous?
No, only in that leg.
Be our guest.
Maybe no song represents more our next segment, Food from the Movies. The song Be Our Guest from the movie Beauty and the Beast is all about food and service. And that's what we do here. It's an annual segment that we do.
on Oscar Sunday, where we talk about your favorite food movies, food scenes from the movies. Every year we hear about different ones. People call in and text in their favorites to us, and we're going to open up the phone lines right now and get things going with this. 312-981-7200. Tell us your favorite movies about food or favorite scenes, food scenes from the movies. And we've already had a bunch come in to us. This one comes up every year, not a surprise, because it is one of the greatest food scenes of all time, the food fight scene from Animal House, the classic, absolute classic with John Belushi and that whole class of characters in the film. Mystic Pizza, when the food critic gave them the highest rating, 4 stars. Another terrific scene, food scene from the movies. We've had a bunch already texted into us, like the movie The Big Night. This might be my favorite food movie of all time. It's from 1996. It stars Stanley Tucci and Tony Shalhoub. They are brothers trying to open up a restaurant in New York. Nobody's paying attention to their restaurant, although Tony Shalhoub, who is the cooking brother of the two, he is, you know, fantastic chef and inventive chef and so passionate about food. And so they create a special night, a big night, and they are expecting, you know, if we just get a celebrity to come in and try, for let's have this big night, we'll invite Louis Prima, the great Louis Prima. Let's invite him, and he'll show up, and that'll get into the newspapers that he showed up at our evening. And, you know, amazing scenes about food. The finale of the movie where they present this big night of food is really something. And as you would expect from Stanley Tucci and Tony Shalhoub, amazing performances in this movie as well. Has always been one of my favorite movies of all time. Somebody from the 847 texting in the scene from the movie Pulp Fiction with Samuel L. Jackson talking about the Big Kahuna Burger and the what was it, the Royale? I forget, you know, how they were saying how McDonald's are called one thing in one country and one thing in another one. Do you remember that?
It was the Royale with cheese.
The Royale with cheese. Yeah. The Royale with cheese. Yeah, another fantastic scene. Somebody has called in the deli scene from When Harry Met Sally. When they're sitting, they're actually at Katz's Deli. It's a famous New York deli. And Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan are talking about how, you know, so whether or not fake orgasm, you know, can be realistic. And Meg Ryan, in the middle of this deli, goes ahead and simulates a fake orgasm that left a customer at the next table who happened to be the director's mom, Carl Reiner's mother, real life mother, delivering one of the most famous lines from the movie, "I'll have what she's having." All great scenes. Yeah, thank you. 312-981-7200 is our telephone number. What else do we have here being texted in? Ah, the National Lampoon Christmas Vacation dinner scene. Truly one of the best of all time. The overcooked turkey that everyone is trying to enjoy, which reminds me of the food scene from the movie Home for the Holidays, in which the turkey is overcooked. It explodes. The food winds up everywhere. Another great food scene from the movies. What's your favorite? 312-981-7200. 815 area code says the pasta eating scene, the spaghetti eating scene in Lady and the Tramp. Oh, of course, where Lady and the Tramp are eating a piece of spaghetti. It winds up being the same strand, and they wind up a very, very kissable closeness to themselves.
312-981-7200. Beth, how about you? What's your favorite scene from the movies?
My favorite scene is from Flashdance, the lobster eating scene.
Oh, my gosh. I'd completely forgotten about that. I don't think that's ever come up.
Yeah, that was. No, I listen to it every year, and I've never heard it.
Yeah, I don't think anyone has ever brought that up. That is, that's a good one. When's the last time you actually watched that movie?
Years ago, a couple decades ago.
Yeah,
maybe.
I'm with you. I haven't seen it in years. But isn't that funny how it stuck with you all this time?
Well, yeah, that's not something you're going to forget, really.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm glad you called in, and I hope you have a wonderful Sunday today.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much.
Bye.
312-981-7200. Paul, hello. You're on WGN.
Hey, Gene. Because I was in a production of It's a Wonderful Life, I was thinking of that movie and how after the run on the bank, he's told to come to their home. George Bailey's told to come to their home by his new wife.
Yes.
And she's got the little rotisserie thing going, and it's in this old house. It just, you know, making it as romantic as possible since they couldn't get away for their honeymoon and everything. It was always such a great scene.
Water dripping all over the house.
Yep.
And am I remembering correctly? I watch the movie every year on Christmas Eve. If I remember correctly, the chicken roasting was
Over the fireplace.
Over the fireplace, but wasn't it because it was like attached to an old phonograph? As the phonograph went around, they had a cord attached to it that, you know, made it made the chicken go round and round.
Yeah, it was making it amateur, like a Rube Goldberg kind of rotisserie.
Right, right. Yeah, when I saw on the screen a food scene from It's a Wonderful Life, you know, I was like, food scene from It's a Wonderful Life. I don't think I remember one, but that is a fantastic scene that you bring up. Very, very good. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Have a great day. Let's go to Maria. You are next on WGN. Hi, Maria. Are you there?
Yeah, I am. Hi, Dean.
Hello.
Wonderful show, as always.
Thank you.
This is about food in general. It's called Babette's Feast, and it's probably at least 30 years old, that movie.
Yeah.
And it's a woman that leaves France. She's a chef cook. And then she's at one of the islands off of the coast of France, and she has to get a job. She works in, like, a senior citizen's home, and everything looks like oatmeal, breakfast, lunch, dinner.
Yeah.
And she slowly starts sneaking in spices like garlic and olive oil and lemon and all this, and wine, introduces wine, and all of a sudden, all these people that have been sitting there very dour around the meal table all start talking with one another and just having the best time.
Right.
And that's the whole story of it, and it's such a wonderful, wonderful movie.
It's a wonderful movie. These are also, you know, by the way, you know, we're talking about food scenes from the movies, but these are all movies you should look up, you know, and see, you know, is it streaming someplace? Can you check out some of these movies? Each and every one of them is a classic and worth seeing even beyond the food scene of the movie. But Babette's Feast is definitely one that needs to be seen. I'm so glad that you called up, and that was a fantastic description of it, Maria, by the way. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Love WGN. Love your show, too. Great job you do, Dave.
I appreciate you calling in today. Thank you so much. We'll get to some more in just a minute. 312-981-7200. Here's the 630 area code. Dean, this year's nominee, the Holdovers food scene at their Christmas dinner. Well, you know, this whole, I don't want to give away too much of the plot line here, but the whole premise of the movie, The Holdovers, is that it's set at a boys' school, and it's Christmas time, and almost everybody goes home for Christmas, save for one student. He has to stay because his parents aren't available to bring him home. So if a student stays, a teacher has to stay. That's the Paul Giamatti character, and somebody has to cook for them. That is the divine Joy Randolph character, who's probably also going to win an Oscar tonight. So, you know, there are several times during this movie where there's food is being consumed. But there is one very, as this texter says, it was a short, sweet, and poignant moment in the movie. I know exactly the scene that you're talking about. So if you have seen The Holdovers, you know what we're talking about. If you haven't, I can't recommend this movie enough for a variety of reasons. One of them is that food scene. Let's get a couple of messages in here, and then we'll get right back to the phones. 312-981-7200. You have a favorite food scene from a movie?
Well, of course, the food fight in Animal House does come to mind.
Hey, look at me. I'm a zit.
That is really amazing. Yes. So that's got to be one of them. And then you were bringing up the food scenes in The Holdovers that I saw recently.
There's a lot. There's a lot in that movie.
Yeah. And a very good movie, too, by the way. So, you know, those are among the ones I can think of offhand.
Did you ever see the movie Goodfellas?
A long time ago.
A long time ago. Yeah. But remember the scene where they're in prison and they're making Italian food and he's cutting the garlic with the razor blade?
Oh, okay.
Making marinara sauce. Yeah. That's one of my favorites as well. There's a there's a movie... a scene in the movie Stand By Me where there's a pie eating contest. Remember that? I can't repeat what they're shouting out during this, but the kids are, you know, are going nuts, you know, trying to win the pie eating contest. You know, so that's another one. We've got a lot coming in on our text line, including, let me see here. The scene in Pretty Woman when Julia Roberts is eating escargot for the first time. That's a good one.
And the food scene in Sleepless in Seattle, right?
Right. the movie, I think it was Public Enemy, the movie, it just says here, Jimmy Cagney smashing the grapefruit in his girl's face. I'm pretty sure that was the movie Public Enemy.
Public Enemy, yeah.
Back in the 1930s. 312-981-7200. Favorite food movies, favorite food scenes from the movies for Oscar Sunday next. One of the great of the many food scenes from the movie Moonstruck. There are so many great food scenes in that film. Truly, people ask me all the time, what are my favorite movies? And it's so hard to put, you know, a definitive list together. But Moonstruck definitely would be in that top five. Kim, how about it for Moonstruck? Great food scenes or what?
Oh, the best. At the very end of the movie, when sort of all of the truths come out, and they're all sitting around the table. I come from an Italian-American family, and that is just so reminiscent of where everything happened. The kitchen was the hub of the house.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, in that movie, there's the scene where the great Olympia Dukakis says, have I been a good wife?
That's the scene.
I want you to stop. End. And, you know, he stands up and slams his hand on the table. All right.
Okay. And then she says, te amo. And he says, yo, te amo.
Oh,
I love you.
Amo, yeah.
It is, yeah, that is one of my top five favorite movies, always.
Yeah, and in the kitchen, the scenes where Johnny Camerari comes back and you know, tries to break off the engagement with Cher, even though she's carrying on with Johnny Camerari's brother, played by Nicolas Cage. But they're always around the table, right?
Always. And she says to him, and I'm going to come to your funeral in a red dress or something. I'm going to come to you. Something to that effect. Yeah, she's great.
Yeah, someday you'll learn to accept this. Someday you'll die and I'll come to your funeral in a red dress.
Yes, exactly. Oh. Yeah, that is such a great movie. Well, we love your show, Dean.
Olympia Dukakis over at the stove making the eggs with the hole in the bread.
Yes.
I forget what that's called. It's called something. But that was the first time I had ever seen the bread, you know, make a hole in the bread and cook the, you fry the egg inside the bread like that.
Just one great
food scene after another. And I'm not Italian like you are, but I could 100% relate to everything going on.
You are in spirit, though.
Yeah, I think
so. Your affinity for food and people, you are totally an Italian in spirit.
I think
in all the good ways.
I think that might be true. I appreciate your call, Kim. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Have a great day today. Hi, Jewel. You're on WGN.
Hi. Good morning, Dean. The movie that comes to my mind is the scene in Cool Hand Luke when he's eating all those hard-boiled eggs.
Right.
I love that movie.
That's a good one. Oh, my gosh. That's a good one. Let's see what else we have. Some of the other ones coming in. Yeah. Bird's Nest. Somebody texted in. That's the toast that you make in the frying pan with the fried egg.
Yeah.
It's called a bird's nest. Yeah. Thank you for reminding me about that. The movie, what is this? 6-3-0 area code. The movie The Jerk, where Steve Martin says to the waiter, "There are snails on her plate." They're escargot.
So many movies.
Fantastic. 815 Mrs. Doubtfire, when Robin Williams sprinkles hot pepper in Pierce Brosnan's food. Right. There's so many good ones here. 312-981-7200. Appreciate your call. And let's go to Pat. You are next on WGN.
Good afternoon. One of my favorite movies is Christmas in Connecticut.
Oh, yeah.
And especially the scene where she's asked to flip the pancakes.
Remind me about that. I don't think I'm remembering that.
Obviously, it's Christmas in Connecticut. She's playing the part of a writer, a food writer, home writer type of thing. And she can't cook worth the darn. And all of the food is prepared by her uncle, who came from an Eastern European country. And she is asked by her boss to flip a pancake. And as she's making pancakes in the morning.
Yeah.
She's not the one making the pancakes. And every time she's tried to flip a pancake, it's ended in disaster. And this, she ends up closing her eyes, and she flips the pancake, and it lands right in the pan properly.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Boy, I haven't seen that movie in such a long time. I have to go back and watch some of these great old classics.
Oh, I watch that one every Christmas.
Yeah. I haven't seen it for several years for some reason, but I'm going to have to look for it. Because, as I say, besides the food scenes, these are all great, great classic movies that we're talking about that should be on everybody's list all along the way. I hope you have a great...
And my kids love Ratatouille.
Oh, Ratatouille, of course. Could there be a better movie for this topic, right? It's all about that.
Yes.
I appreciate the call, Pat, and I hope you have a great day today.
You're very welcome. You too. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. 630 area code says... Dean, the Sound of Music dining room scene where the whole Von Trapp family is sitting down to dinner waiting for Maria. She comes in late as the kids told her she should, and then sits on a pine cone. The captain asks her what's wrong, and she says, "Oh, nothing, it's rheumatism." Yeah, I remember that scene, you know, where the captain is still so strict and Maria is, you know, getting ready, just getting used to living in that household. Here is Cliff. You are on WGN. Food from the movies today.
All right. I was just driving home from the grocery store, so it's perfect. Two movies. One is Sideways. Not a comfortable scene when Paul Giamatti bolts out of the wedding and is sitting at the burger joint sneaking wine in his soda cup. And
very much like what he did, by the way, when he won the Golden Globe and
then
went to In-N-Out Burger with his Golden Globe. I think that was intentional to pay a little tribute to his movie Sideways. But anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No worries. And I'll take off after this one, let you get to other people. Also, Goodfellas.
And it's a scene that if you're ever trying to catch up to serve a bunch of people and you're behind, but it's when Ray Liotta is making meatballs. He's high. He hears helicopters, and he's scared to death while he's, rolling those meatballs in his hand. I think about that whenever I'm in a big rush to serve a lot of people. That was it.
Try to get it done.
Appreciate it.
That's great. Goodfellas, another one, just loaded with one great food scene after another. I think about, was it Martin Scorsese's actual mom, his real-life mom, who was in one of the scenes where they stop at the house, and she's making some, I think it was spaghetti and meatballs, I might be wrong, but she was making some Italian dish, and all the Goodfellas show up, and they eat at the kitchen table there. Loaded with good stuff. Appreciate the call. Thank you, my friend.
Sure thing. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Cliff. Have a great day. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. The great scene from the movie A Christmas Story where they get their Christmas duck served to the table, head and all, until the waiter chops it off with a hatchet, a cleaver, meat cleaver. 312-981-7200, your favorite food scenes from the movies. 312-981-7200. Okay, let's go to Mark. You're on WGN. Hello.
Hi, fellas. The only movie or TV series that I've ever seen, they're eating Chinese food without chopsticks. They're actually using silverware.
What is that, A Christmas Story?
No, Godfather.
Oh, and Godfather.
That's the only movie, or unless you know better than I do.
I haven't paid attention to that, but I guess I will from now on. I don't remember.
Do you use chopsticks?
I do, actually, yes.
Oh, well, you're more sophisticated than I am.
I learned how to do it when I was a kid, so it's not tricky.
Big fan, Dean.
I'm trying to remember when they're eating the Chinese food. I guess it's when they're, like, getting together. Was it Sonny Corleone? The guys are sitting around together, something, eating Chinese food. I don't 100% remember that scene. But I'll look for it next time. Speaking of movies like that, David, you're on WGN.
Hi. A couple callers ago took the words out of my mouth about Goodfellas, but I'll mention a different movie. Back in the 90s again, you remember a movie called Quiz Show?
Yes, yes. Robert Redford.
The scene? Yeah, they're eating at the Appenheim, I think, and they're talking about the Reuben sandwich and where it was invented.
Oh, yes.
And he goes, he looks around the restaurant and he goes, hey, I don't see too many Reubens around here, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I do remember that scene. Okay. I do remember it. I'm glad you called in. I appreciate it. 312-9.
One more, maybe?
Oh, sure, of course.
Even earlier than that, from the 60s, Oliver. Food, glorious food.
Of course.
Remember the musical?
May I have more?
Okay.
May I have more? He wants more.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a good one. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Here is the 312 area code. Dean, Tony and Tim here, it says. The scene in Funny Girl where Barbara Streisand eats lobster in Maine with Omar Sharif with her gorgeous nails and period imperfect beehive hairdo. That's very specific, but a memorable scene nonetheless. Actually, somebody else called and texted in the lobster scene in Annie Hall. Also a very, very good one. Let's see what else we have here on the text line here. Dean, pretty much the entire movie of Chocolat. Oh, my, yes. That was one of those movies. The movie Julie and Julia, pretty much the entire movie. It's also, 100% food-centric. The diner scene in Five Easy Pieces with Jack Nicholson, absolutely. Here's one. Oh, this is right down my alley, 312. Dean, how about all of the Three Stooges movies with all the pie fight scenes? Very definitely. Here's another one for Moonstruck. I'm telling you, Moonstruck is just one great food scene after another. This one,
says, I love the John Mahoney Olympia Dukakis at dinner scenes. That is fantastic, where John Mahoney is out on a date with a younger girl. She throws a drink in his face, and Olympia Dukakis is sitting at the next table. You know, and they get into a conversation about, you know, why are you doing this? Why are you dating? And, you know, they strike up a little friendship, and it's just a great scene. Two of my favorite actors. God bless the late John Mahoney. 312-981-7200. Keith, you're up next on WGN. Hello. Keith, are you there? Yes, yeah. Sir. Yes, sir.
I don't know if this qualifies as a food eating scene, but in the movie Caddyshack, there's an apparently offensive object in a swimming pool.
Oh, yes, I remember that, yes.
And they drain the pool, and they send in Bill Murray in a hazmat.
Yes.
And, right. And he goes in, and he picks up the object and pulls down his mask and takes a bite and goes, Baby Ruth.
Baby Ruth bar, right. They thought it was something else that was floating.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. Yeah, a very funny movie.
I think that qualifies as a food scene from a movie, definitely.
Yeah, very good.
Thanks, Keith. All right. Appreciate the call. Hello there, Maria. You're on WGN.
Yes, hi. Dean, I love your show.
Aren't you nice? Thank you.
Oh, you're great, really. And I also love Moonstruck, one of my all-time favorites. But the two movies I was thinking of were... two oldies, classics. One of them was A Christmas Carol, and the Alistair Sim version is really my favorite, but when the Cratchits are eating the Christmas goose, there's just something about that scene. It's just, well, it makes me hungry, number one,
but it's just such
a warm scene that they don't have much, but they're grateful for everything that they have.
Yeah,
and Tiny Tim, it's the goose, you know, and it's just a beautiful scene. The other one is from the movie Giant, another one of my all-time favorites with Elizabeth Taylor and Rock Hudson,
yeah.
And when they're at Thanksgiving, she went to her, Elizabeth Taylor went to her parents for a while to take a break from, you know, being with Rock Hudson out in Texas. And they're eating, there's a turkey that's always running around. They have like a big sprawling state. And then on Thanksgiving, at Thanksgiving dinner, the turkey is actually the main dish. But the turkey was a lot, and the kids were playing with the turkey a few days before.
Yeah.
And so the kids are all sitting at the table crying while this turkey is being served.
Horrified that their friend is being served on a platter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Boy,
I
haven't seen the movie Giant in such a long time.
It's a wonderful movie. It's wonderful. I love it.
You know, all the food scenes aside, these movies that you're hearing us talk about in this segment, stream these movies. I'm sure they must be available on different streaming services. Giant is one of the greatest movies of all time. A lot of these movies that we're talking about. And Moonstruck, forget about it. I could watch that movie every day for the rest of my life.
Me too. But, I'm in 1956, I think Around the World in 80 Days won the Oscar, and Giant was up for Best Picture, and it was so... What a dumb, I'm sorry, it's just my own little opinion, but I think Giant well deserved that Oscar, but anyway.
Yeah, I think probably because Around the World was, you know, visually spectacular or something. I don't know.
I'm sure. I'm sure. I don't want to knock it. Yeah, but
Giant is an amazing movie. James Dean also, right?
Oh, yes. He was one of my favorites.
James Dean.
He only made three movies, and he was so good.
Yeah, good in all
every single one.
So you're 100%
right. Yeah.
All right. I appreciate
it. I love movies.
Maria, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. I appreciate all your calls. I appreciate all of your texts, as usual. Phone lines jammed. Text line jammed. Somebody texted in their favorites are the restaurant scenes in Bonnie Hunt's movie Return to Me, that was filmed at Twin Anchors Restaurant. Couldn't agree more. And 847, I'm so glad you brought this up. My Big Fat Greek Wedding. He's a vegetarian. He doesn't eat meat. What do you mean you don't eat meat? That's okay. I make lamb. Classic scene. All great ones. Anyway, we're out of time. Thank you all for listening today. Good thing, because I think I'm out of voice, too. The Academy Awards are tonight. We will recap them all tomorrow morning, both on WGN-TV Morning News on television and on Bob Surratt's show when I do my regular entertainment segment with him between 8 and 8:30 tomorrow morning. We've got a lot of good A-list guests that are coming up next week on TV. And next Friday, we're doing our annual St. Patrick's Day show at Bourbon Street 115 in Marionette Park. That's always a hoot, so I hope you can listen and watch for all of those.